space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Thank you.
my friend.
He's got a laptop. There it is. He's got a laptop.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Listening to Mad Science at www.shazoozradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. That's like Superman. You can fly in there. Whoosh and stuff, you know? Okay, just kidding, but you can't really fly in there. You'll smash your face on the screen trying to get there. Anyway, if you want to join in on the chat, jump over. There's four separate chat rooms. Scroll down underneath the four separate chat rooms, and you'll find a link for People for People Radio Network as well. Go over there and jump in their chat room, and do not create a ruckus, because, I don't know, just go over and tell them I said hi. Anyway, so renewable energy, big question mark there. We're going to play a couple podcasts, and I might even be inspired to, you know, butt in once in a while. You know how old Crazy Harris is. When you hear somebody trying to talk about some sort of shenanigans, got to say something about it, because the whole deal is they say they need clean, renewable, alternative energy. All right, so what are we waiting for? That's what I'm asking. What's taking so long? You got these top scientists out there supposedly working on stuff, big old labs and everything like that, access to all kinds of equipment and machinery and funding and all that. What's taking so long? All right, well, I'm going to have to think that maybe the power company ain't really necessarily awful hip about the whole renewable alternative energy thing right there. Because, you know, you want to sell what you got. You want to sell that electricity. And the people who sell the power company the coal or maybe even the oil, or whatever, they want to sell their product as well. So there's a whole lot of products being sold here. Everybody's buying and selling and trading and, you know, playing the stock market. The price is going to go up this, or barrels are going to go down, or they're going to go up, or whatever. And so, you know, there's a massive amount of money being changing hands all the time. So I wouldn't necessarily say that portion of the industry is like rushing down the road trying to say, hey, let's set up some clean, renewable, alternative energy. Even though they play a good game and they talk a good game, you know, hey, how long have they been talking about this, folks? They've been talking about it for so long, it's ridiculousness. I mean, it's flat out ludicrous how long they've been talking about this stuff. Y'all talk about, well, we gotta find answers, we gotta find solutions. What? Are you serious? Look, we obviously haven't read the same science books. We obviously haven't done the same research or whatever. Because all I'm hearing is excuses, you know. All I'm hearing is people saying, what we got to find. We ain't got to find nothing. We got it all. Every single answer to every single question to resolve every single problem in the alternative energy, clean, renewable energy, we've already had it. We've had it for so doggone long. And it's ridiculous to listen to some of these people talk. But I got to play some of these podcasts because if you go back and check on the dates of a lot of these clean, renewable, alternative energy stuff, they're dated back. Some of them's only a year ago, but nonetheless, some of them's even further than that. And for Pete's sake, don't Google free energy on YouTube, because you'll come across so many shenanigans. This one particular channel out there, actually it's a couple of them, probably in the same area of the world, always saying free energy this and free energy that, self-running, and they put all these gizmos together, and none of which do what they say they're going to do. Yeah, you can't plug in a light bulb to a speaker and expect that speaker to work, or that light bulb to work. And in between some of the shenanigans, in between a lot of the shenanigans are possible, you know, like magnetic motors that could potentially work if the were configured properly. There's so many different, you know, good ones out there, but they're always hidden behind all the garbage. Now, I don't know if that's an intentional deal for YouTube or just so many people watch these videos that they're putting them so high in the ratings. But if you look at anything that's in the free energy, anything that says free energy on it, or over unity or 0 point or anything like that, even perpetual motion, you'll find that you know, they're all surrounded by everything possible to debunk any possibility of anything like free energy. First off, if you can't find free energy, you simply did not pay attention in science class or physics, and you have no clue what's actually going on. You just didn't pay attention in school, period. That's as simple of it. And if you're one of the ones that believe it's all, you know, not possible, Well, then you really did pay attention in the modern day school, because they told you exactly what you needed to hear. And now you run around like a little parrot saying, "Hey, man, there ain't no such thing as free energy. You gonna get something for nothing and all that, really? Are you serious? What if I'm standing outside and I got my shirt off and that sun is blistering my skin because it's awful hot outside. My body's supposed to be 98.6 degrees, and so anything above that, I start getting hot and I sweat or whatever. That's a lot of power coming off there. I stay out there for too long and I'll have blisters on my skin, red, look like a lobster, and then turn around and come inside and suffer for hours and hours on end while that energy tries to dissipate. It's still burning my skin even after I went inside. So I'm miserable, and then I'm sick. So you're going to tell me there ain't no such thing as free energy? Well, somebody better turn that light off, because, you know, it's there. It's been there for a long time. And how long does it actually have to be there before it's actually classified as free energy? That's what I'd like to know. But nonetheless, giving the devil his due, the sun, you can't count that as free energy. And the wind, you know, it's always windy somewhere, so, you know, wind blowing your hair sideways, giving you a bad hair day and all that kind of jazz. Sometimes, some places on this deal, it's so doggone windy after. There's actually, like they think they call Chicago the Windy City because it sets off of Lake Michigan and it's always got a lot of wind blowing things around all the time. But, you know, they say that wind power ain't going to cut it either. You really? There's wind all over the planet. Somewhere, somehow, there's always something going on. There's hydroelectric water, rushing rivers, and all this kind of jazz. So what's behind all that? Is that not classified as energy that's free that you could tap into? The power company's been tapping into it, and they sell you that power, too. But we got to cover our costs, folks. That's what you got to pay your electric bill so we can put us up these fancy towers that we own, and then you will turn around and continue to pay us for years to come. So that's the way it works. My question is, when are the average Joe going to get together and do something to put a people's power company together to want you all invest in the machinery and you get the power company working outside of, you know, normal maintenance or whatever? Nobody has to pay for a bill anymore. You already paid for it. You bought the equipment. You know, you get you a whole solar panel array in your backyard. That's your power. You know, and you can store it and do all kinds of stuff with it. It's yours. It, you know, you collected it. So, you know, you don't have to pay for that no more. But, you know, it's ridiculous. Look, it's going to happen. No matter what they do, no matter how hard they try, they're going to make the mistake and they're going to give the world free energy. They turn around and show these modern day technology, and one, I think it's in one of these podcasts that I'm going to play, where they're actually doing solar panel technology that you can see through. I mean, you can use a solar panel as your window in your house, as the window in your car for that matter. And so that's going to unlock the gate for all kinds of technology to expand from that. But nonetheless, giving the devil his due again, they say that, you know, solar's not efficient, sun's not always shining, all that kind of jazz. Well, something happens in those solar panels to make those solar panels produce energy. And so with that said, you figure out what that little something is. And you can use solar panels even in the dark. So, you know, it don't even need to be sunlight out anymore. If there's any kind of light whatsoever, any ambient light in the room is putting power into something. There's energy moving all over this place. So, how you can't find free energy, I have no idea. The people don't understand. Electricity, it comes in so many different forms and fashions, shapes and sizes, and it's not just AC current, it's not just DC current. It's different frequency ranges of how fast or how slow this energy is moving around. you're floating in a sea of it, and the debunkers will say, ooh, all these people out there saying we're floating in a sea of free energy, and I'll see it, and what, you ain't paying attention. Hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, all the little dust particles moving around, all these things are producing energy. And if you know what to do, if you know how to store this energy, you can store it, and you can get it to do work. Voltage is pressure, and I've been telling everybody forever and a day, high voltage is the way to go, because you're going to be able to move a lot of energy rapidly, and you're going to be able to use that pressure to store, and then you'll get what you want out the other side, because you know how to use it properly, and you won't be destroying your doggone appliances and stuff. A lot of current, that's what, you know, tungsten wire, nickel chromium wire, those wires are used in heating elements of different devices, and they are designed to resist current flow. Well, that current flow causes them to get hot, just like everything else. Too much current to any device will cause it to get hot, and eventually it'll reach its thermal breakdown. So let's start with this one right here, because I think this one's kind of funny to me.
The world, renewable energy use is on the rise, and these alternative energy sources could hold the key to combating climate change.
See, right out of the gate, climate change, that bash you in the face with climate change, and it, maybe they're not necessarily bashing you in the face with it, well, to me it looks like they are, but I don't know, maybe they're just bashing your brain, because I know they're bashing my brain every time they say climate change. It's ridiculous, because it's one of those rejectable, I didn't even got nothing nice to say about it, because how do you deny climate change, because the climate changes all the time, so you can't say, well, climate change don't exist. Well, it don't the way they're talking about it. Hey, let's keep going. So, right out of the gate. There you go, whack, there's climate change. We gotta get clean, renewable, alternative energy. We're gonna be green power, you know, save the planet. Yeah, right, we need to save the people from the planet. I'll tell you what, here you go.
What is renewable energy? Renewable energy is generated from sources that naturally replenish themselves and never run out. The most common sources are solar, wind, hydro, geothermal, and biomass. Over 80% of the total energy consumed by humans is derived from fossil fuels. However, renewable...
Bing, 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 I'm jumping in. Somebody tap me in. It's ready to fight. I got my knuckles up and I'm sitting here doing the dance. Come on, come on, let's throw down. She just said fossil fuel. All right, look. I don't care. You can argue with me till you're blue in the face, or green in the face, or red in the face. You can pull your head out and get mad at me and call me stupid or whatever you want. But there is not, and there never has been, ever, ever in the history of time, any fossil fuel. Period. No way, no how. And I'm not even going to get into it at the moment, but there is not, and there never has ever been, any fossil fuel. There's no such thing as fossil fuel. And we'll get to it.
Renewables are the fastest growing source of energy in the world. Renewable energy has many benefits. First, it can combat climate change because it creates no direct greenhouse gas emissions. The only emissions that they produce are indirect, meaning those that result from manufacturing parts, installation, operation, and maintenance. But even those are minimal. Second, renewable energy can decrease pollution and therefore reduce threats to our health. Wind, solar, and hydroelectric systems create no air pollution emissions, and geothermal and biomass energy systems emissions are much lower than non-renewable energy sources. Third, renewable energy is a reliable source of power. Because renewable energy sources are, well, renewable, they will never run out. What?
But the problem is you don't own them. You don't own the wind farms. You don't own the hydroelectric dams. It's the man who runs the dam. It's the dam guy. He's just like the one that owns it, right? And he's charging you power for everything. Big solar farms and all that. You don't own them. Now, those of you who's fortunate enough to have your own, then you're finding out that it's a little bit harder than you thought, because these people out there either want to regulate you, or the way they're using solar panels these days is ridiculously inefficient. Those solar panels are capable of so much more power than you're actually using off of them that it's ridiculous. And it's the way you're using energy what is the actual problem. But the key point of all these renewable power sources that you mentioned out there, the company owns them. The people don't. And you're going to continue to pay as long as they continue to maintain those things. They're doing it all for you. It's all for the public. They're going to get this infrastructure going on. They're going to save you, you know, lots of money and save the planet, right? Wrong. They're not. It's always going to be a scam to sell you something that's already been provided to you by nature. Now, when you learn these technologies, you'll be producing your own power. And then you'll be reducing how much you're buying from, the drug dealing doggone electric company. You know, because electricity is a drug, right? And it'll get you high. All right, so that's what you rush up there, because I got to have my lights on. I'm gonna go pay the man. That's it. I need my fix. All right, and I like lots of lights. I like my air conditioning, and I like my everything. So I want to watch my TV and my YouTube and all that. So I need to go pay the man. Now, you're already paying for your internet service, plus you're paying for the electric bill, and it's probably costing you to sit here and listen to me. So, you know, I hope you get your money's worth of mad science today, because I want to make sure you get a bargain. You can study this stuff up, folks, and you learn these little bitty things I keep pointing out all the time. You'll find out what I'm talking about, and this is why these doggone governments get by with everything. This is why these doggone governments get by with having a petroleum-based dollar bill, the petrol dollar, as opposed to having gold and silver be behind your money, your finances, where you got real tangible assets. Now, you're dealing in energy. They're making money. Your money is based on energy. And it's also based on the lie, because there is no doggone fossil fuel out there. You ain't never, ever, ever, ever going to see a day when you run out of what they call fossil fuel. It's not physically possible. It's not chemically possible. And they're saying, you'll hear it, they'll say it here sooner or later, maybe not in this podcast, but one of them that I listen to, they'll say it. They'll say we're going to run out in 50 years. Man, I hope so. For humanity's sake, I hope we do run out of fossil fuel. You know, this crude oil. I hope we do run out of it. Not because I'm afraid it's going to pollute the planet, but because these idiots, number one, they don't know how to use it properly. Otherwise, it would be clean. We wouldn't be having this conversation. And the fact that, they keep on telling you they're going to run out, so they keep jacking the price up on you. And we go to the gas pump, got to pay more. You're probably even paying more for your tennis shoes, because it's got rubber in it. It's a petroleum product. And that Tupperware you got, it is sitting there having your soda or your doggone tea or whatever. You're sitting there having your drink there while you're listening to some crazy old man sitting there talking smack on the power industry. Well, you know, that doggone thing is a petroleum-based deal, too. It was made out of plastic. Alright, so if we run out of crude oil, you better start recycling your plastic, brothers and sisters, because you ain't going to have no more Tupperware if we ever run out of crude oil. Can't have it. It's petroleum-based. Anyway, so they got the lie going on. Let's keep on going, because this might just get a little bit rowdy up in here. Might very well end up turning out to be a ruckus, for that matter. So I say, don't go over there people for people and start no ruckus. They don't play.
All right. Once built, renewable facilities cost very little to operate, and the fuel is often free. As a result, renewable energy prices tend to be stable over time. While renewable energy has many advantages, it is not without downsides. it is difficult for renewable energy sources to generate power on the same large scale as fossil fuels. Building wind farms and dams can disrupt wildlife and migration patterns and lead to ecological destruction. Both solar and wind energy are intermittent. They only generate power while the sun is shining or while the wind is blowing. Batteries can store excess energy for later use. However, they are often costly. While renewable energy presents some challenges, it also offers an environmentally friendly alternative to the greenhouse gas emissions and pollution of fossil fuels. And as advances in technology make renewable energy more accessible, affordable, and efficient, an end to climate change could be within our reach.
Hold on now, see, that just, that last statement to end the climate change could be in our reach. They must be smoking peyote through a peace pipe or dropping acid at the same time. I think they got some magic mushrooms going on too. How you gonna ever change climate? You gotta, look, how you gonna stop climate change? What, you gonna get up there and hold back the wind? You ain't gonna let the rain come down or anything like that? I tell you what, go over there in the Philippines and stand there 5 minutes, it's like sunny as all get out, and then the next thing you know, bam, it's pouring down rain and everybody's running for cover. You know, it's like, you never know when the climate's going to change over there. It's just ridiculous. All right, so, you know, that's these folks, I tell you, they must be on it. Okay, that's the end of that one. Thank God. We made it through that one. Alright, that was the National Geographic. Okay, let's push this one on here. Now, this lady right here, I got to give her credit. I mean, she's got a lot of knowledge, but it's all, unfortunately, it's all based on what the standard school book says. Nobody listens to a guy like me because I'm not on PBS.
The future is going to require us to make some dramatic changes to the way we produce and consume electrical power. Climate change is happening whether we like it or not, and switching to cleaner sources of energy is the main...
That's true. Climate change is happening whether you like it or not. And I'm going to shove that in your face. Tell you got to reduce your doggone carbon footprint. How you going to reduce your carbon footprint? What, do you got some doggone carbon paper on the bottom of your shoes or something like that? Or is some carbon coming off the bottom of your shoes when you're walking? Like, you leaving dirt tracks on your mama's floor? They go, what's that doggone carbon paper where you put one on and then you can write your name and it's on the other paper too? Yeah, you want to reduce your doggone carbon footprint. Put some clean shoes on, like the one to wear at the doctor's office. What, got the little footies over the top of your shoes so you ain't tracking carbon in the house, man. You go black up your mom's carpet, she's going to black up your eye, I'll tell you that. Moms don't play. You think they're playing around? Yeah, I tell you what, go over to your mama's house right now and wipe your feet on the carpet. See if she don't wipe her feet on you, I'll tell you that. Let's get into this thing here.
Anyway, we'll be able to keep it from getting worse. And we'll run out of fossil fuels eventually anyway. That's why engineers are
I hope we do. I'm telling you. I honestly hope we do. Please. Please run out of fossil fuels. Because I'm so tired of hearing fossil fuels. I want us to run out of fossil fuels. Man, imagine the day you go to the gas pump and you're like, look, man, I don't know what to tell you, bro. We just ain't got no more doggone carbon footprint anymore because we ain't got no gasoline going on. There ain't no oil. We ran out of oil. There just ain't no more oil anywhere. So you go find some oil and we'll make you some gasoline. Really? All right, I'll go check it out, man, see what I can come up with. All right, but you, look, go. I hope they do, man. I really hope they do run out of fossil fuel. The sooner we run out of fossil fuel, the sooner I'll be able to get people motivated to move forward and give them what it is they said they want, a clean, renewable, alternative energy. Man, I tell you what, talking out the side of your neck and being blinded through the eyeballs, or you're deafened in the ears where you can't hear basic science and common sense, that must be the standard goal. They must be injecting through the doggone vaccines something just make it where your brain will only hear what the school book says. You can't listen to a guy with jacked up hair, because if you listen to him, you're stupid, man. This guy don't know what he's talking about. Even though he spent a lifetime reading the science books and doing tests and repeating and all that using the scientific method. And you're going to tell him, we need some carbon, huh? We need some crude oil. Hope we do run out of that. Hope sooner the better. Get some dang work done. That's what I'm saying.
Looking for ways to scale some of the existing sources of energy that don't rely on fossil fuels, and maybe even find sources that are entirely new. There are all kinds of promising candidates, from nuclear fusion to plain old hydrogen, to poop, to electrical power.
Hold on. She just said poop. We're gonna get some carbon emissions from some poop. Girl's hollering about doggone methane, man. Cows are farting and burping all over the doggone place, causing the planet to heat up. Heck, man, I was sweating so bad standing next to those cows. My face was on fire. My eyes were watering. Wait a second. That had nothing to do from the doggone global warming. That was just probably from that funk that was rolling around. It's like the dang brother getting in the elevator with you, ripping one out on bean and chili and tostada day or something like that. Beefy bean burritos all floating. They're like a green cloud murking up the joint. I don't know what the heck they're thinking, because now let's just move on. I'll tell you what.
About half of all biomass energy is delivered by burning plant matter directly, which humans have been doing long before the need for electrical power. A wood-burning stove can keep your house warm in the winter, or it can be used as a heat source for something else.
Yeah, let's pause there for a second, because look, a wood-burning stove is renewable energy, all right? No ifs, ands, or buts. You know, people think, well, you know, when you burn that firewood, it's all gone. No, no, it's not. All you did is change the chemistry of it. You just changed the makeup. It's no longer firewood. It's a different chemistry. It's so you actually have soot that you can use for another fuel source, because they call it creosote. It builds up inside your chimney and your wood-burning stove, and if you don't keep an eye on it, you know, not only will it eat through the doggone thin old pipe that they sell you at the hardware store, and from the inside to the outside, and both vice versa, you got water raining down on the outside, you got this soot eating from the inside, and this stuff will gum up. It'd be like a big old plug inside the pipe. And then one day you start up your stove and it starts smoking like heck inside the house. And then the next thing you know, that heat builds up underneath that cork that's in there. And then just like a freaking cannon, something's got to give. The pressure, the heat, and next thing you know, pow, boom, you got a doggone fire cannon shooting 30 feet out the stack of your chimney there. And if it don't burn your house down, you got extremely lucky. That's all right. But, you know, what about the poor bird flying over the top that just got shot by a cannon, you know? It's, I'm telling you, there's an energy inside that stack that would blow your doors off, not to mention the wood ash itself that can be used for everything from fertilizer to making lye soap and all that. So it's renewable. It's a renewable source. The earth reuses everything. Everything's recycled. You can't even get rid of water no matter how hard you try. So how are we ever going to get rid of crude oil when you got grass clippings, you got trees and all these different sticks falling all the time, and you got animals killing each other and people running amok? You got all kinds of crud floating all over the place, and this earth is just taking all this stuff, mixing it back in, making another cake. Yeah, that's it. And then you think the doggone well went dry, so you close up shop and move on down the road. Some lucky sucker moves over there, finds out the oil well's full again, and hey, he struck it rich. But then he finds out, I can't even sell this oil that's now on my property because the people prior to me kept all the mineral rights when they sold me the land. I can use the land, but the oil belongs to them. Guess what? You're moving back out again. They're moving back in. I didn't know there's still oil in that well. Well, you do now. You ain't going to run out of it. It's not possible. It's not physically possible. Unless the earth stops doing what it's been doing for what they say millions of years or whatever. Billions of years. Yeah, the dinosaurs. They all fell over dead and and turned around. Well, here's how, and he said, like this big rock come flying in from space, blapped the planet, threw a bunch of crud in, started an ice age, killed off all the doggone dinosaurs, and the dinosaurs magically made all this crude oil that we call fossil fuel. Yeah, right. That's the biggest hockahooey in the history of hockahooey. And if you bought it, you need to get you a shirt that says, I love dinosaurs. All right, big old shirt with a pterodactyl or a Tyrannosaurus Rex or one of them big old long neck sucker that looks like a big old green giraffe mixed with Gumby. All right, so I'll tell you what. Get you that shirt and say, I support fossil fuel. All right, that's it. You know, just don't go in a crowd of green people because those people will probably beat you down as if you had a red hat on. We all know what the red hat symbolizes. Man, I'll tell you what, don't wear your dinosaur shirt down there talking about how you love crude oil. Yeah, I grease my hair back with that, bro. Hey, look at this. It's all slick. Woo! All right. Yeah, you look like you came from the 50s. Grease is peace. That's what they said. Grease for peace. And it's coming back. You're going to be greasing back your hair with crude oil, running amok down through there, screaming like a banshee as you go down the road hollering, clean, renewable, clean, renewable. I got a carbon footprint again. Woo-hoo!
Pizza, for example, on a larger scale, scrap wood left over from wood processing or from waste produced by humans, along with food waste, can be burned in power plants more directly. Most of the other half of biomass energy comes from processing biological matter into biogas or biofuel. By pulping and chemically treating biomass derived from crops and other plant matter, it becomes easier for special proteins called enzymes to chemically break it down into a more readily usable fuel source. One example of this is our old friend ethanol, the type of alcohol you'll also find in drinks. Ethanol is produced from enzymes breaking down crops such as wheat or corn. That can then be turned into a liquid fuel suitable for burning. But it's not just plants that we extract energy from. As certain types of agricultural waste like manure decay, they can release what's known as biogas. These are gases like methane that can be burned as a source of fuel. There's also another small contributor to biogas production, human waste. When I said engineers will find a way to get energy from everything, I meant everything. Biofuels are already being used pretty widely. In Brazil, 4 out of every 5 cars produced have hybrid engines.
How is it? Tell me this. How is it that they can get by with saying that these people can get energy from anything? Extract energy from anything. We've been saying this on the Mad Science Show. Energy's everywhere. Your energy, everything's energy. Don't matter what it is. Alright, everything is clean, renewable energy source. It don't matter, there ain't no such thing as waste. And if you, unless you throw it on the ground and you're not using it, you put all that trash in the dumpster and then it goes on down to the landfill. It stinks old Billy Bob's house up because he's downwind from that and the sewer plant's on his right. And so he's getting attacked from 2 different directions. Then some farmer pulls in there and starts a pig farm on the other side. So he's in a whirlpool of funk. All right, his eyes are watering. His children are upset. Everybody in the house is like uncomfortable. It stinks to all get out. And finally, Billy Bob can't take it anymore. So he walks outside on the front porch, sets down, lights up his pipe, and boom, there goes the dinosaurs again. You done lost the dinosaurs a second time around. Caveman killed them the first time. Man, if you think I'm joking, go look at my video, Caveman Killed the Dinosaur. Tell you what, that's exactly how it played out. If there is a such thing as fossil fuel, that's where it came from, right there. That doggone caveman killed the dinosaur, and all those dinosaurs rotted and seeped down into the ground underneath your shack, and then the doggone industry came in, and they fracked up underneath your house. They didn't ask you. They drilled sideways from their land to your land, sucked out all the gas underneath there. Now your house is sitting a little lower than it did yesterday. Might even be really low. It might be sitting in a doggone sinkhole because they come out. No, you don't own that far down under the ground. See, go see if you can tunnel from here to China and build you a house up underneath there. By the time you get over there, and the Chinese will bang a hole in the wall and say, what in the heck are you doing? Well, ain't nobody on the ground down here. So I just built me a house. Well, yeah, guess what? We own the house, so we're going to use this as a shortcut to come over there with our army and take over, man. That's how that's going to play out. You think you're going to be a mole? No, you ain't. No, you ain't, but they're going to drill sideways. Heck, they probably already drilled in China. They're probably tapping China's oil right now. Natural gas. And Russia's wanting to put their gas line across the line over there to Europe, when Europe, all they need to do is take that drill and drill sideways over there in Russia's gas pocket. And then all of a sudden, the meters start going low over there in Russia. Be like, what's going on, man? I don't know. Somebody's sucking the gas up out of here. It's crazy, folks. You think this ain't crazy? It's crazy. It's crazy because you might be rich and you don't even know it. You're sitting on top of a gold mine right underneath your house. Question is, do you want to take all that gas and the hydraulic pressure off from underneath your house? Might not be such a good idea. Might be better off just sticking with the solar and all that kind of stuff. But somebody's going to get it. Tell you, sinkholes popping up all over in the doggone world, and they're trying to say, oh, it's just natural, you know, this is natural. Well, go down there in Independence, Missouri, down there, you go down there and there's all kinds of limestone mines where they have been making storage, and suddenly one day a doggone sinkhole pops up in the middle of the road and they can't figure out what's going on. All right, some lady drives her car off into it. Thankfully, she wasn't, dead or anything like that. But shoot, man, how many times can you drive your car in a hole and survive? But anyway, we'll just keep on moving right along here.
Is capable of burning both ordinary gasoline and bioethanol. To be clear, burning biomass fuels does release carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, just like fossil fuels. But because a nearly equivalent amount of CO2 is captured from the atmosphere during photosynthesis to store chemical energy, on the balance of things, biomass energy is what's known as carbon neutral. We can also always grow more plants, which makes biomass more renewable than fossil fuels. But given that plants absorb CO2 as they grow, you could argue that we shouldn't just release it all back by burning them. And processing biomass into biofuels often requires some amount of energy input, which indirectly releases more CO2. Humans already use about a third of all CO2 absorbing plant matter on Earth. Destroying even more of those plants to release energy could be catastrophic for certain ecosystems. And even though we could grow more plants, we'd have to trade off the use of land, water, and chemical resources between growing food or providing energy. Demand for all those resources is already high and projected to continue growing pretty quickly. As with any other power system, there are places where engineers can make better use of what's already there, like improving the design of those hybrid engines that burn both ordinary gasoline and biofuels. We might also be able to use different biomass sources like algae, or find more efficient chemical reactions for processing biomass into fuel. That might unlock new, more sustainable ways to use biomass for power. But there are other
I got news for you. We live in a carbon-based world. And even biofuels are carbon-based. So what do you're doing what nature has already done. Alright, if you can make biofuel, then you know that nature has already done it. Alright, look, it's a different color. You make biodiesel out of algae. It's a different color because it hasn't been cooked at the temperature that the crude oil's been cooked. But you didn't do anything that nature hadn't already done. See, they think that biodiesels and all these different types of fuel like that is new technology. And it's not. It is not. It don't matter whether it's popcorn oil or crude oil. It's the same doggone stuff. Nonetheless, but you just give the devil his due, man. Let's move right along. I'll tell you what, man. If you run out of crude oil, I'm gonna be a happy camper.
Futuristic power sources that don't release any CO2 while being consumed. Although, as we'll see, that doesn't mean they're carbon neutral. Hydrogen is the most abundant element in the universe, which makes it pretty surprising that pure hydrogen is very rarely found on Earth. It consists of a single proton and electron, and if you can produce it, it's the perfect source of fuel for the very aptly named hydrogen fuel cell. Fuel cells of this kind use a chemical reaction between hydrogen and oxygen to directly generate electrical power. And the only other byproduct of this reaction is water, much better than carbon dioxide. There's a fairly big problem though. If hydrogen isn't naturally produced on Earth, how do you get it? You can use the process known as electrolysis to chemically separate water into hydrogen and oxygen.
Well, yeah, you could use electrolysis. All right, you could. But every time you start talking to anybody about hydrogen technology being free energy, they're going to say, oh, well, it takes too much energy to do that with electrolysis. Oh, yeah, because electrolysis is the most inefficient way to get hydrogen technology, hydrogen separation from the oxygen, water molecule. All right, Stan Myers was doing it back in the 70s. Why is it he could drive around in a dune buggy with hydrogen technology, but it suddenly doesn't exist yet? We're still using hydrogen technology in things like forklifts and stuff like that. Listen.
And just store the hydrogen. Except performing electrolysis uses energy. In fact, producing hydrogen fuel requires more energy to produce than you get from using it in a fuel cell. Efficiency-wise, that's not great. But there are good arguments for having hydrogen fuel cells in your power-producing arsenal. For starters, because hydrogen is the lightest element, hydrogen fuel is incredibly lightweight, which makes it great for transport, like on spacecraft. And unlike solar-powered devices, if you have hydrogen fuel at the ready, fuel cells don't require recharging, like batteries. So they're great for indoor vehicles like forklifts, where releasing lots of fumes could be problematic. But you also need to use them pretty much continuously, which makes batteries less practical. Finally, if we can efficiently produce hydrogen fuel by electrolysis from the surplus energy provided by solar power on especially sunny days, hydrogen fuel could give us a carbon-neutral way of storing electricity. On a larger scale, there is a power-producing process you might have heard of that's already used to provide a good deal of energy, 10% in the US, while releasing comparatively tiny amounts of CO2. Nuclear fission. In fission, an atom splits in two, releasing a lot of energy in the process. Nuclear power releases the same amount or even less of those greenhouse gases than most renewable energy sources. But don't be fooled, it's a non-renewable source of energy. The main fuel used in nuclear fission, uranium-235, is a limited resource that has to be mined and purified.
Yeah, so let's smash particles together, man. Let's just do it. Smash them all together. Let's do it. Alright, this is one of the ones that drives me insane about... I'm just going to let her finish talking. Ugh, you're giving me a headache.
...fired from the ground, much like fossil fuels. The way we get power from uranium is by assembling rods of uranium parallel to one another and setting up a chain reaction. The nucleus, or core, of a uranium atom is made up of protons and neutrons. If a fast-moving neutron hits a uranium atom at just the right energy, it can split the uranium in two. The uranium splits into atoms of other elements like krypton and barium, but three of the neutrons from the nucleus will fly off carrying some energy with them. Those neutrons can then collide with another uranium atom, causing fission that releases even more neutrons, and so on. Meanwhile, the cascade of splitting atoms gives off gamma radiation and heat, heating up the reactor. So fission turns a nuclear reactor into a heat source for a power plant. Unfortunately, once you've used up all the useful uranium in the rods, you're left over with the biggest setback of nuclear power. Nuclear waste.
All right, before she gets into nuclear waste, if you want a really simple explanation of nuclear power, you run up there and slap the bee's nest. All them bees will come out buzzing around, stinging you on your face and your booty and everything else like that. And you just got the good example of what radioactivity and nuclear fission and all that's about. So you got all this energy happening around you. So run up and slap a bee's nest and you'll understand nuclear power. Here you go.
It's a radioactive material that emits highly energetic particles that can be extremely dangerous for any living thing, including humans. Dealing with it safely is the sort of issue nuclear engineers can help with. They also design nuclear power plants to carefully control fission to stop it turning into a runaway process. If that happens, it can lead to disasters like the kind that happened in Chernobyl or Fukushima. As for nuclear waste, nuclear engineers aim to find as safe a way as possible for disposing of it. Most of the time, used up uranium rods are put into thick steel containers and buried in deep underground vaults far away from any people.
And you want to know why? Do you really want to know why they bury it in steel containers and so far away from the people? Do you really want to know why? Go watch Galen Windsor's Nuclear Scare Scam and he'll explain to you why. But the fact is, They just put all that doggone energy, that free energy, because even though it won't boil the water to the extent that they need to be able to run the steam turbines, it's still depleting and it's still releasing energy. And so there's still thermal energy available on that right there. So you got a lifetime supply. If they say we got 75,000 tons of freaking depleted uranium or whatever, radioactive material waste out there, then you got 75,000 tons worth of free batteries. Go ask NASA how they got that probe supposedly to Pluto after being in space for 9 freaking years and still be able to produce 200 watts on the other side. Ugh. There ain't no such thing as radioactive waste. It's not waste unless you're wasting it. If you're burying it in the ground, why are you burying it in the ground? It's still energy. Alright, you still could use that same doggone energy for a thermal process and allow it to do what it does. Go watch Galen Winger's nuclear scare scam. I guarantee you'll hear something different on there. But nonetheless, school has told you it's not safe, so you're afraid of it. They said that Fukushima was going to be the end of the world, but they said that several years ago. And they're still hollering, it's the end of the world, it's in the world, we're all doomed, we're all doomed, we're all screwed, we're all going to die. And people are still going about their daily business. People still live there. You know, so what's going on here? Hey, you know, Chernobyl, they said that was a bad deal. All right, and there was a guy on TV, actually went fishing down there. All right, why would you go fishing in some place that was a nuclear wasteland, radioactive wasteland or whatever? There wasn't a whole bunch of deer and animal running amok down there. They weren't like three heads and seven eyes and all that kind of stuff like the sci-fi told you about. People weren't dropping dead every 5 seconds from radioactive sickness. Why would they even allow anybody to go in there? Well, yeah, I guess if you want to go fishing down there, you might die, but you know, go ahead, have to each his own. Now, there's some more going on there, folks, that you ain't being told about. That's a fact.
Or kept in tanks near the nuclear power plants themselves. Neither of these solutions is ideal, and engineers may find a better way of handling the problem in the future. But it would be better if we could find a way of generating nuclear power that produces no radioactive fuel as waste at all, which is where nuclear fusion comes in. It's the same energy-releasing process that occurs in the sun. So naturally, getting it to happen here on Earth...
All right, stop it. Just stop it. All right? We gotta find a way. Find a way to generate the same result that you're going to get from radiation, from nuclear waste. We got to find a way in order to generate that without producing radioactive waste. Think about this for a second. Alright, think real hard. Think real hard. Think about it just for a little bit longer. How are you going to make the same thing happen that happens in a nuclear power plant with radioactive material without generating any waste? Huh. You might just call it your microwave oven. Imagine that. You hit that doggone water molecule, which is a dipole molecule, and it's got a north and a south on it, all right? You hit that with a microwave, it rocks that water molecule, producing friction, which in turn produces heat, and it cooks your food from the inside out. It boils the water. So, what? Yeah, alright. Never mind. You got a radioactive generator in your house called a microwave oven. It cooks your food, and that is what goes on when that energy is being released from the doggone depleted, constantly letting go of its energy. It's sending fast waves through that water molecule. It rocks it because it gets it real hot and everything. That heat is rocking those water molecules and producing steam. Then when it turns around and gets too weak and it can't do it fast and efficient enough, then they call that depleted. And so then they take those rods, which are still highly radioactive, they're just not hot enough. They put them in cooling ponds for 10 years. 10 years in a cooling pond. And then they put them in concrete and steel and bury them under the ground so that you can't get a hold of it. That's what.
It's something many engineers are looking into. In fact, the National Academy of Engineers in the US has declared the goal of providing energy from fusion one of its grand challenges for the 21st century. In addition to the improved solar power we talked about last time, the major setbacks to providing energy from fusion are the intense amounts of heat and pressure that atoms need to fuse. Without the gravitational strength of the sun on hand, nuclear physicists and engineers have to design some of the world's most powerful magnets to contain plasma, an extremely hot gas made up of ions or atoms with an electric charge. Unfortunately, the magnets require energy to operate, so fusion has to deliver more power than the magnets consume for it to be useful. And we haven't figured out how to do that yet. In 2018, a test reactor in the UK announced they'd reached temperatures of 15 million degrees Celsius in a plasma, well on the way to a sustainable fusion reaction. And currently under construction in the south of France is what will be the world's biggest fusion plant, called ITER. The design is still experimental, but the hope is that it will be capable of delivering the first ever self-sustaining fusion process, capable of generating more power than the magnets consume. Engineers have already contributed to the effort by designing more efficient magnets and contributing to the design of ITER itself. But if fusion ends up being a suitable power source, they'll have a lot more work left to do to scale it for wider use. Between the sources like solar and wind power we talked about last time, and less developed tech like nuclear fusion, there are lots of different ways we can change the future of energy for a world less reliant on fossil fuels. No matter what, we'll need a new power infrastructure to support the cleaner energy world of the future. And that infrastructure, that future, will be built by engineers. In this episode, we looked at alternative energy sources. We saw how biomass can be burned as a fuel source, how hydrogen can be used in a fuel cell to generate electrical power, and how nuclear fission provides power to the grid. Finally, we saw how nuclear fusion might someday do the same without any radioactive waste. Next time, we'll be looking at ways of storing all that power when we look at energy storage and batteries.
Yay, when we look at energy storage and batteries. Woo-hoo, we got it made now, but I'll tell you what. What about capacitor technology? What about graphene technology? What about all these different things that science just hasn't figured out yet? Let's move on to the next one here. Can 100% renewable energy...
Every year, the world uses 35 billion barrels of oil. This massive scale of fossil fuel dependence pollutes the earth, and it won't last forever. Science.
I hope not. Man, I hope we run out of it. But when we do, guess what? The ecology, your world is going to begin to collapse, because if we run out of fossil fuel, then we ran out of everything that's carbon-based, which, that's everything. So here we go. Let's get on it. I hope we run out of it. You know, if we run out of it, it's all done. It's a done deal. Don't have to worry about filling up your gas tank anymore. Ain't gonna have no carbon. It's all gone.
Scientists estimate that we've consumed about 40% of the world's oil. According to present estimates, at this rate, we'll run out of oil and gas in 50 years or so.
50 years or so. You got 50 years or so. 50 years or so. I don't know what the or so thing is. That's probably when the wells fill themselves back up and they're like, oh, well, we must have found a new well. We must have found some more oil. Well, lucky for us, we still got oil, so we're back in the game. Folks, you're always going to hear about the oil industry. Because everything is made out of all types of plastics, everything is rubber, all different types of petroleum products, everything that you can possibly imagine. If you look at how many different products actually come from petroleum-based crude oil, it'll blow your doors off. It's not just gas. It's all kinds of stuff. There's actually some people, I think it was over in the UK, who were turning old plastic bottles back into petrol, gasoline, fuel. Alright, there's the process. Nature's been doing this process. Mankind's just got to figure it out. We're going to run out of oil in 50 years or so. Alright? 50 years or so, that's it. I got to wait 50 doggone years just to get rid of oil. Man, what a mess. And then you won't even be able to slick your hair back with grease anymore, because there ain't no more oil. All your hair is going to dry out. So let's go to the dreadlock deal. Y'all get some dreadlocks and you don't have to be worried about washing your hair anymore. Just big old clumps of dirt and whatever crawling on your hair out there. Stinking old hair falling off in clumps. Tell you what, that's what you need to do. Get you some dreadlocks, all right? Unless we can make some algae-based oil that we could, you know, grease our hair back and, you know, have the 50s be back or whatever. 50 years from now, you ain't even going to have no doggone algae if there ain't no carbon. So go ahead, see if you can reduce your carbon footprint. Not possible. Get some carbon paper on your feet and go walking through your mother's brand new white carpet. I got to see this. Make sure you YouTube it so you can go viral. You'll be famous. Here we go. Let's get on down the road here.
And in about a century for coal. On the flip side, we have abundant sun, water, and wind. These are renewable energy sources, meaning that we won't use them up over time. What if we could exchange our fossil fuel dependence for an existence based solely on renewables? We've pondered that question for decades, and yet...
Well, one of the problems that you're going to have right there is, like, you talk all kinds of, you know, puppy dogs and bunny rabbits and flowers and utopia kind of world that you're going to think you're going to get when you get this clean, renewable, alternative energy. Well, the government ain't going to allow it. The fuel industry ain't going to allow it. The industry itself ain't going to allow it. You're not going to be able to just get that. You might get it somewhere down along the line, but it's going to be under their terms. You're going to be paying, you're going to keep, you ain't even going to miss a lick, man. You're not even going to miss a stride. You're going to be paying your electric bill. And they're probably going to end up paying a higher bill because they're going to say, well, these solar panels cost us more to make, so we got to make our money. You don't want us to go broke, do you? These wind turbines are not cheap. What? Come on, man. We've been showing you here on the Mad Science Show how you can make your own doggone wind turbine at home. And people are going to try to, well, I just can't run my whole house off of it. Well, start running your house right instead of using the energy wrong, and you'll be running your whole house off of it. We just, folks, got to start paying attention, I'm telling you. These are the ones that make up the rules in the world for you. Right here, these folks are talking like this right here. Let's get our utopia going on. I'd love to see utopia. I love peace and love. But doggone, you know these companies out there, they still want to sell their gasoline. They still want to sell their crude oil. It's the petrol dollar for a reason. It's not backed by gold. It's backed by oil. The oil industry. That's why we go to war. That's why everybody's fighting over who gets to put their pipeline here, who gets to have the oil, who gets control of the oil in the Middle East or in Africa, who gets control of the oil. That's it. They want to control the oil. And we're going to run out of oil in 50 years, so everybody's going to run around and fight over what's left. You ain't going to run out of it. It's a scam. It's all a scam, and it was set up to basically depopulate the world via war, make a heck of a lot of money in the process, sell food and drugs and ammunition and tanks and machinery, all on the taxpayers' back. While telling you, you're a patriot. You just do what you're told, know your place and shut your face, put your uniform on, grab up that gun and get out there and kick your brother upside the noggin and stuff. That's what they want. They don't care about you. They never did. Now, when's the people going to start caring about the people? When's the people going to use real science and real physics to get this job done? I'm tired of complaining about it. You know, we got everything we need, but we've been indoctrinated and basically dumbed down and, you know, who knows, hypnotized, mind controlled into believing that we're powerless. We're not even remotely powerless. We're made up of energy. So even our bodies are credible machines, efficient machines. We take nature's food and we put it in our body and it changes the chemistry and it gives us the energy to get on down the road. There's hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen. Your body's three-quarters water. There's three-quarters water on the earth. There, you ain't never going to run out of water. It's not physically possible. You're not going to run out of oil. It's not physically possible. You're not going to run out of coal. Ever since the world's been doing what the world's been doing, there's heat, there's pressure, there's a constant mixing. If you look down there in the doggone lava deals, it's sucking material in. It's mixing it up. It's making new gases. It's putting gases out in the atmosphere. It's mixing this gas up here. It's mixing that material over there. Nature is sitting there constantly cooking and baking and charging and doing all this stuff while we're sitting around arguing about what it is, how we're going to find renewable alternative energy. Are you kidding me? Come on, man. Give me a doggone break, for Pete's sake. I've been studying this stuff since I was a zit-faced little science geek in school. Used to get beat up for wanting to learn how to things work in this world. You're too smart. You look funny. You got those doggone glasses or whatever. All right, well, I tell you what. I had somebody ask me one time, how is it you know so much? I said, because I paid attention in school, you fool. That's why I got good grades and graduated sooner. Because I paid attention. That's back when they actually used to really teach you something. Now they're teaching all these kids, we got to save the planet from climate change, while denying the energy is free. There ain't no such thing as free energy. That's what they say. You go out there, you look it up on YouTube, you'll find all kinds of mocks and ridicules and debunks and all this kind of stuff. And in the middle of it, you'll actually have some real devices that people are working on using real physics and stuff like that and trying to troubleshoot it. So everybody who's trying to work on clean, renewable alternative energy is getting kicked upside the head, robbed, beat up, murdered, you know, and threatened or whatever. If you don't sell out, then you're going to get sold out. That's all there is to it. It's the system. It's the man. They want you to pay them, so they don't want you to tell the world that you can get clean, renewable alternative energy just by paying attention in school. That's what. Let's move on down the road and hear some more of these crazy shenanigans these people were trying to spew out down there. Yeah, we got to save ourselves from climate change. Our CO2 emissions. Every single one of you is going to be drinking flat soda if these folks get their way. Guess what's that carbonation is inside there. They don't call it carbonation for nothing. CO2 is in your soda. You're going to have to drink flat soda. Hope you enjoy flat soda. Might as well just get the doggone Cert bottle out and suck on that. Call that your sody. Alright? drink some green tea. That's healthier for you anyway. You don't need that doggone soda pop. They could use that to clean battery acid off the terminals of your doggone car battery, for Pete's sake, man. So, it'll rot your teeth, rot your gut, and clean the battery at the same time. Heck, they used to clean doggone deck plating with Kool-Aid in the military, back in the Navy, back in the 80s. They called it bug juice, and that stuff would shine up the deck plates. It's perfect degreaser. So imagine what that's doing to your teeth and your insides. These folks, I tell you what, they get on my nerves.
Renewable energy still only provides about 13% of our needs. That's because reaching 100% requires renewable energy that's inexpensive and accessible.
And that ain't going to happen. Look, every bit of the energy that you use out there is renewable energy. Every bit. Every single bit. When you go to the gasoline station and you buy gasoline, it is renewable energy. It always has been. And it's cost you a lot of money because it's called, you know, supply and demand. You demand it, they supply it. They give you they take your money. you got it. But then whenever they want to make some more money off of it, they try to tell you they're running short. They ain't running short. They ain't never been running short. Man, you're running short. You're working your booty off at how many jobs you got. You and your wife both out working while the kids are out running amok and being indoctrinated. Well, that you're the one running short. They ain't running short. They ain't running low on oil. As long as they tell you that, they can charge you more. You think that? Look, they're going to tell you that whenever the doggone wind turbines and the and the hydroelectrics and all the different renewables come online, when they finally put it out there, they're going to say, well, we didn't have a windy day, so we got to charge you more money tomorrow. We got to make up for yesterday. And then the same thing. Oh, well, it was cloudy outside, so we didn't get as much. We had to work a little harder for it, so you owe us a little more on your bill. Everything is renewable. You burning that gasoline, you think that gasoline's gone? No, it produced a chemical reaction and something came out of your tailpipe. Stick your finger up the tailpipe of your car, run your finger along the side of it, especially if you got a diesel. You're going to come out with some soot on your finger. And then when you look at that doggone that exhaust pipe while it's running, you're going to notice something. Hey, why is there moisture coming out? Why is there water dripping out of my exhaust pipe? Whoa, that's impressive because, that was gasoline we were burning, but we got water dripping out of our tailpipe. And if you ever did pay attention to what really is going on, you could see that the right way that the doggone exhaust systems in your car are actually engineered, they are designed to fail. They are designed to rust out from the inside out so that you have to buy a new exhaust system after a certain period of time. And you got to go pay the man for an inspection on your vehicle. You got to have it tested for carbon emissions. If it's not perfectly engineered, it's not going to have a perfectly clean burn. Therefore, you're going to have to pay more taxes on the deal. Are you starting to see a trend here? Are you starting to see some sort of things that are not adding up? Something? Wait a second, what the heck is going on here? Everything you do is going to cost you money as long as you're in that system. It's all going to cost you money. There are red flags that should show everybody and his brother that the system is not there to help you. The system's there to generate revenue. Your equipment, your machinery, everything that you buy is designed to fail. They call it planned obsolescence. They want it to fail so they can sell you more. And if they keep the argument, the debate going on about whether there is or isn't free energy, whether there is or isn't clean, renewable, alternative energy, so on down the line, well, then they can generate money via donations, via government programs that you're paying for on the taxpayer dollar. They're screwing the world. They are screwing the world, flat out. There's no nice way to say it. Because every single resource available out there is a renewable energy source. And it has always been. Now, I don't call it mad science for nothing. It makes me mad. Because they're stealing from people. They're killing people. They're allowing people to starve. They're allowing people to be sick. And the people are standing idly by because they believe the lie. They support the same beast that's standing on the necks of humanity and not allowing guys like myself to speak out information that we could resolve this in such short order that there wouldn't be no reason to go to war anymore. You're going to keep on sending your brothers and sisters to kill somebody else's brothers and sisters so that you can keep the man fat catting. He's making money off of your back. He's making money off of your pain and suffering. The food industry, the medical industry, the alternative, the energy industry, the automotive industry, the military industrial complex, every single last bit of them are lying to you on a regular basis, and they're teaching your kids trash in school. Because if they were thinking for themselves, if they paid attention in science class, if they paid attention to the mad science show, then they would know that there is no such thing as waste. The earth does not waste anything. And it is all renewable. Every single last bit of it. You will not ever be able to run out of crude oil. You will not ever be able to run out of coal. You will not ever be able to run out of oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, water molecules. You will not be able to run. You can't run out of nothing. No matter what you do to it, you can't destroy it. But people don't get it. They just don't get it. You can't destroy anything on this world. All you can do is change the chemistry. That same chemistry gets mixed right back into the system. Nature is in control. We are not. We've never been in control. And it's a good thing that it was set up like that, because under this kind of mindset that we got going on here as humans and the society of humanity, we're screwing ourselves. Everything's been provided for us. The food, the medicine, everything. The energy has been provided for us. We're just not using it properly, and we're sitting around complaining while we watch each other suffer and die. And it makes me mad. Not at the people per se, but at the system, and the fact that the system continuously does the exact same thing to you, and you're like alright with it. If the people come together, if they want clean, renewable, alternative energy that is so incredibly efficient that you don't have to keep paying the petrol dollar to the man, then let's get it done. That's what I've been saying. Let's get it done. I'm getting old. I'm getting tired. I'm getting cranky. I'm fed up with watching this system get by with quite literal murder, theft, and everything else under the sun. When we got the knowledge and the power right here at our fingertips, we have access to the vast sum of all man's knowledge and then some, and we can't get nothing done. You got a penny in your pocket. I got a penny in my pocket. Let's put those two pennies together. Now we got 2 cents to work with. Let's put all of our money in the middle of the pot. Let's take the ones out there who are the good bean counters that we trust and send the money to them. And they disperse it out to who needs it. You need some tools over here. Let's fix them up. You get the tools for them. Hey, you know how to run those tools. You go over there, show them how to run those tools. That's how we get things done. Somebody delegates every bit of job and helps each other out. And that's how we get things done. That's how houses are built. That's how machinery is built. And you've been doing it every single day of your life. If you got a job in any industry, it doesn't even matter if all you're doing is singing. You're providing a service. And nothing gets done if you stop singing, because nobody's going to come there. They're not going to want to go eat if they don't have a floor show. So you're a valuable piece of that machinery. Everything is usable. Everything is reusable. Everything is recycled. My gosh, people. What is it going to take? Put me on the doggone floor of the House, of the Senate, and the Congress, and the Parliament, and let me tell these people how in the heck to get things done, because they seem to not know what the heck is going on. There ain't no such thing. No such thing as an energy crisis. You're not going to run out of food. You're not going to starve to death unless you choose to starve to death. This world is such a... It's already a clean, renewable, alternative energy. The whole planet is a thermoelectric generator of epic proportions. That doesn't even count the chemistry. That doesn't even count the friction. That doesn't even count all the thermal capabilities and all the doggone water moving from point A to point B, the wind blowing, the sun shining, the people stomping on the ground, machinery going, radio waves, waves from space, all kinds of energy flowing around 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year to infinity and beyond. So tell me that there is no such thing as free energy, and I will tell you, my friend, you just did not pay attention to a single word I said. And you sure as heck didn't listen in school. And if you did listen in school and you're still thinking like that, you went to the wrong school. Go join the University of Mad Science, for Pete's sake. Get up there, go on to Shazoo's Radio Super Chat. There's a button up there that says, attend the University of Mad Science. Go pass that test right there, and you're on your way to what it is that you desire. Because if you can answer that question, then you are going to know how to deal with the system that's eating you alive. flat out. And I'm taking a breather and let this man talk some more and see if he gets me riled up. I feel like I'm ready to dance up on this stuff.
This represents a huge challenge, even if we ignore the politics involved and focus on the science and engineering. We can better understand the problem by understanding how we use energy. Global energy use is a diverse and complex system, and the different elements require their own solutions. But for now, we'll focus on two of the most familiar in everyday life, electricity and liquid fuels. Electricity powers blast furnaces, elevators, computers, and all manner of things in homes, businesses, and manufacturing. Meanwhile, liquid fuels play a crucial role in almost all forms of transportation. Let's consider the electrical portion first. The great news is that our technology is already advanced enough to capture all that energy from renewables, and there's an ample supply. The sun continuously radiates about 173 quadrillion watts of solar energy at the Earth, which is almost 10,000 times our present needs. It's been estimated that a surface that spans several hundred thousand kilometers would be needed to power humanity at our present usage levels. So why don't we build that? Because there are other hurdles in the way, like efficiency and energy transportation. To maximize efficiency, solar plants must be located in areas with lots of sunshine year-round, like deserts. But those are far away from densely populated regions, where energy demand is high. There are other forms of renewable energy we could draw from, such as hydroelectric, geothermal, and biomasses. But they also have limits based on availability and location. In principle, a connected electrical energy network with power lines crisscrossing the globe would enable us to transport power from where it's generated to where it's needed. But building a system on this scale faces an astronomical price tag. We could lower the cost by developing advanced technologies to capture energy more efficiently. The infrastructure for transporting energy would also have to change drastically. Present-day power lines lose about 6 to 8% of the energy they carry because wire material dissipates energy through resistance. Longer power lines would mean more energy loss. Superconductors could be one solution. Such materials can transport electricity without dissipation. Unfortunately, they only work if cooled to low temperatures, which requires energy and defeats the purpose. To benefit from that technology, we'd need to discover new superconducting materials that operate at room temperature. And what about the all-important oil-derived liquid fuels? The scientific challenge there is to store renewable energy in an easily transportable form. Recently, we've gotten better at producing lithium-ion batteries, which are lightweight and have high energy density. But even the best of these store about 2.5 megajoules per kilogram. That's about 20 times less than the energy in 1 kilogram of gasoline. To be truly competitive, car batteries would have to store much more energy without adding cost. The challenges only increase for bigger vessels like ships and planes. To power a cross-Atlantic flight for a jet, we'd need a battery weighing about 1,000 tons. This, too, demands a technological leap towards new materials, higher energy density, and better storage. One promising solution would be to find efficient ways to convert solar into chemical energy. This is already happening in labs, but the efficiency is still too low to allow it to reach the market. To find novel solutions, we'll need lots of creativity, innovation, and powerful incentives. The transition towards all renewable energies is a complex problem involving technology, economics, and politics. Priorities on how to tackle this challenge depend on the specific assumptions we have to make when trying to solve such a multifaceted problem. But there's ample reason to be optimistic that we'll get there. Top scientific minds around the world are working on these problems and making breakthroughs all the time. And many governments and businesses are investing in technologies that harness the energy all around us. TED-Ed is a nonprofit. If you value our work, please consider supporting it on patreon.com/TED-Ed. ¶¶
So, got back in the nick of time, snuck out to get me some coffee while y'all heard some stuff, you know. So, what are we going to do about it? Well, I don't know. I guess I'm going to have job security at Mad Science because I don't think we're going to do anything about it. Honestly, we can't get nobody together to work on things, it seems like. Can't keep everybody satisfied. Everybody wants to feud and get all upset all the time. But one of these days, they say the crude oil is going to run out. You're going to be running short. All right, let's go again.
It's a really exciting time to be alive. We have a front row seat to the only known transformation of a world powered by dirty fossil fuels to a planet that gets its energy from renewable, clean sources. It's going to happen just once, right now.
Dirty fossil fuels! Dirty sources of energy. You gotta find clean sources of energy. Look, if you go out there and stick your hands in the dirt, you're going to get dirt on your hands. If you're down there working in the coal mine, you're going to get some coal on your face. All right? If you're messing around with crude oil, you're going to get some grease and oil on you. All right? It's just that simple. But dirty, it washes off, man. Nature even provided the water to wash it off. And nature even filters its water. You know, everything's taken care of. We just got to figure that one out. So, look, why he's talking about the difference between dirty fuel and clean fuel, there ain't no difference. Nature's already got it sorted. We're just ignoring nature. We're not working in harmony with nature. We just dig holes in the ground and chop down just tree after tree, and we don't never do what we're supposed to be doing. But whenever you turn one piece into a desert, the doggone nature turns another into a utopia. So everybody thinks, oh, we're going to run out of this and we're going to run out of that. No, you ain't. No, you ain't. Can't do it. You're going to try, but you can't. It's just that it. That's it.
These are the top 10 potential energy sources of tomorrow. Number 10, space-based solar power. Every hour, more energy from the sun reaches us than we Earthlings use in an entire year. To try and save a lot more of it, one idea is to build giant solar farms in space that will collect some of the higher intensity, uninterrupted solar radiation. Giant mirrors would reflect huge amounts of solar rays onto smaller solar collectors. This energy would then be wirelessly beamed to Earth as either a microwave or laser beam. One of the main reasons this amazing idea is still just an idea is because it's, big surprise, very expensive. But it could become a reality in the not-so-distant future as our solar technology develops, and the cost of launching cargo into space comes way down, thanks to the work of companies like SpaceX. Number 9. Human power. We already have human-powered devices, but scientists are working on harvesting power generated from normal human movement. We're talking about tiny electronics here, but the potential when multiplied by billions of people.
They're going to try to turn you into a battery, man. You know those little kids' sneakers that got the doggone lights in there, got a little piezoelectric and a capacitor, and so whenever the kid's walking around, it's charging up the capacitor and lighting up the light bulb. And so you can see the kid from a mile away because the doggone shoes are all lit up. Yeah, they're going to have that kind of stuff. It's going to be in everything. Look, we've been talking about ways that you can charge your cell phone just using your body, you know. Maybe they're going to try to figure out a way to use your cell phone to send wireless energy to the next one in line or whatever. But let's just go ahead and move on.
Is big. And with developers making electronics that use less and less power, one day your phone may charge when it rustles around in your pocket, your bag, or moves in your hand, or your fingers move on the screen. At Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, scientists have even demonstrated a device that uses viruses to translate pressure into electricity. Yes, it's amazing as it sounds, and no, there's no way I'm going to try and explain how it works. Of course, it's linked below if you want more info.
Hold
there are
on.
Even small body-worn systems that
stop
passively...
Stop a second. Doggone it. Let's talk about viruses to basically charge your phone and stuff like that. Man, I'll tell you what. You go watch some science fiction movies. You go out there and you watch Star Trek and all these different ones, and you see that technology. If you can think of, you can build it. It can be done. Doesn't matter. You know, they call it sci-fi. But if you look at all these different technologies that they're talking about, they're even talking about making little miniature versions of generators that, like, you wear around like jewelry or a necklace, and it either uses the temperature off your body or a doggone motion of your body. While you're expending energy, they're recapturing some energy, and they're using it for whatever purpose. Maybe it's to keep your microchip charged up so they can always know where you're at. As long as you're warm, heck, look, we know where he's at. Look, you've got him on GPS, and they'll sell it to you. They'll sell it to each and every one of you. They'll say, yeah, this is the way you can keep your kids safe. Put this chip in them, and your kid will never get lost. Really? Man, there's some people in this world I wouldn't want to know where my kids are at. So, you know, some of these technologies out there, they're already possible. They're already being done. And there's technologies they keep on saying, oh, well, we got new discoveries. No, you ain't got no new discovery. Just perfecting or improving upon something that's already existed. We've been hollering about this forever and a day here on the Mad Science Show, but apparently nobody's hearing who needs to hear. You know, it's the people who need to hear this message. We're trying, but hey, I can only do one what I'm doing. That's it.
Produce electricity when you move. Human power isn't going to solve global warming, but every little bit helps. Number 8, tidal power. Harnessing all the energy in the motion of the ocean could power the world several times over.
All right, I got to get back here. Ain't nothing ever going to solve global warming. Because it don't exist. It's just not there. It's why it's based on bogus science. It ain't never going to go away. It's always going to be something that somebody uses to as a scare tactic to get elected or, you know, to get more money out of your pocket. And these folks that honestly believe in global warming, they honestly believe it. And they're supporting the same people that is basically using them as a pawn because of their stupidity, using them to further their doggone carbon emissions agenda. They've been making money hand over fist by making things deliberately inefficient, by not making things to where you know for a fact that this chemistry is going to cause this reaction, such as oxidization inside your doggone exhaust pipe as the hydrocarbons make their way out of the exhaust from the temperature difference from the outside as the inside, and now you've got water buildup in your pipe, and that sucker's going to rust from the inside and out between the heat and the oxygen working on it. It's going to rust. And we know how to at least inhibit rust to the extent of whatever types of materials. But if you were building that engine efficiently from the get-go, you wouldn't need all that rusted metal in there. You wouldn't need an exhaust system in the standard sense of what you're used to seeing right now. We can perfectly engineer machines that whenever they do put out emissions, even if you are using the air quote fossil fuels, then the burn is so complete, so efficient, and you only have the heat exactly where you need it, which is in the combustion chamber, nowhere else. So you're not wasting heat energy into the air. You're not wasting fuel into the atmosphere. All you're doing is releasing natural back into natural. That's it. We can design the perfect machines that would work in perfect harmony with what nature has already provided, including the internal combustion engine. So, if you want to make it work super efficient, then I'm asking the question, why the heck are we waiting on? Got to get rid of that global warming, right? Wrong.
Which is why over 100 companies are trying to figure out how. Because of the focus on wind and solar, the tidal energy industry kind of got elbowed out of the early mix, but these systems are quickly becoming more efficient. For one, meet Oyster, a 2.4 megawatt producing hinged flap that attaches to the ocean floor and, as it opens and closes, pumps high pressure water onshore where it drives a conventional hydroelectric turbine. One of those could power a whole housing development or a couple massive residential towers, roughly 2,500 homes. An engineer with the Air Force Academy has created the Terminator winged-shaped turbine that employs lift instead of drag, allowing it to theoretically harness 99% of a wave's energy instead of the 50% that current tidal projects can get. And Perth, Australia, just got the world's first ever wave-powered desalination plant that provides the city with enough drinking water for 500,000 residents. Number 7, hydrogen. The element hydrogen, by far the most abundant in the universe, is very high in energy, but an engine that burns pure hydrogen produces almost no pollution. This is why NASA's powered its space shuttles and parts of the International Space Station with this stuff for years. The only reason we're not powering the entire world with hydrogen is because it only exists on our planet in combination with other elements like oxygen. You know, good old H2O. Russia even converted a passenger jet to run on hydrogen in the late 80s, and Boeing recently tested small planes that fly on hydrogen. Once the hydrogen is separated, it can be pumped into mobile fuel cells in vehicles that are able to directly convert it into electricity. These cars are now being manufactured on a fairly large scale. Honda's planning on demonstrating the versatility of its new hydrogen fuel cell car by plugging it into a model home in Japan to power the house, instead of the car sucking electricity from the building like its electric-powered competitors have to do. Honda says one of these fully fueled cars could power an entire house for a whole week, or drive 300 miles without refueling. The main obstacle right now is the relatively high cost of these vehicles and the lack of hydrogen stations to refuel them. Although California now has plans for 70 of these stations across the state, South Korea is expected to have a total of 43 soon, and Germany's aiming for 100 by 2017. Number 6, geothermal heat from underground lava beds. The method of converting the heat rising from the depths of the molten core of the Earth into energy, also known as geothermal, powers millions of homes around the world, including the electricity usage for 27% of the Philippines and 30% in Iceland. But an Icelandic deep drilling project may have recently discovered the Holy Grail when it hit a pocket of magma, which had only happened once before in Hawaii. The team pumped water down into the hole, which the scorching magma instantly vaporized to a record-setting 842 degrees Fahrenheit. This highly pressurized steam increased the power output of the system tenfold, an amazing success that should lead to a giant leap in the energy-generating capabilities of geothermal projects around the world. Number 5, nuclear waste. Nuclear fission power plants are the traditional reactors that have been in use around the world for decades and provide the United States with 20% of our electricity. They use something called light water technology to surround the fuel rods with water, which slows the neutrons and allows for a sustained nuclear reaction. But the system is really inefficient. Only 5% of the uranium atoms in the rod get used up by the time it has to be removed. All that unused, highly radioactive uranium just gets added to our growing stockpile of nuclear waste. But now, finally, there appears to be another, more efficient way, called a fast reactor, where the rods are submerged in liquid sodium instead of water. This allows 95% of the uranium to be used, instead of the unacceptably inefficient 5%. Adopting this method would solve the huge problem of getting rid of our 77,000 tons of radioactive waste, because these new reactors can reuse it. GE Hitachi has already designed a fast reactor called PRISM, and shopping it to power companies. But the biggest obstacle is the high cost of building new nuclear power plants. Plus, you have to overcome the political stigma that nuclear is a dangerous energy source. Still, the benefits are huge. It's a proven technology that emits pretty much no greenhouse gases. The big success story is France, who has 75% of its electricity needs met by its 59 nuclear power reactors. Number 4, solar windows. With production and installation costs getting cheaper by the day, solar power is taking off around the world. Europe is the best in photovoltaics and is driven by its leader, Germany. On an average sunny day in 2012, Deutschland got as much energy from the sun as 20 nuclear power stations, enough to power 50% of the country. Spain is now generating more than 50% of its power from renewable resources like solar. A California desert is home to the largest solar power station in the entire world, and the United States increased its solar capacity by nearly 500% from 2010 to 2014. And if you think that that's as fast as solar can possibly grow, listen to this. Researchers at the Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico just made a significant breakthrough in quantum dot solar cell technology that would allow highly efficient solar panels to double as transparent windows. When this technology becomes cheap enough to hit the mass market in the next couple of years, every sun-exposed window in the world will have the potential to be converted into a mini power station. Number 3. Biofuels. From 2002 to 2013, biofuels grew more than 500% in the U.S. as production of crop-derived ethanol and biodiesel became a mainstream substitute or supplement to gasoline in our cars. In fact, back in the day when Henry Ford first developed his Model T, he thought it would run on ethanol. The discovery of vast amounts of cheap oil all over the world unfortunately made it the go-to energy source, but renewable biofuels are making a strong comeback now. The only problem is that the currently dominant first generation of biofuels use the same land and resources that have traditionally been used to grow food, which is driving up the cost of food and causing big problems in a lot of the developing world. So something has to change if biofuels are going to give us a chance at replacing oil with something clean burning. That's where a plant like switchgrass comes in. It's hardy, it grows like a weed just about anywhere, and it isn't food. But if we wanted to run all of the world's cars on it, we'd need to plant it on an amount of land equivalent to the entire countries of Russia and the United States combined. So that's not going to work. This brings us to the third generation of biofuels, algae, which has all the right ingredients to replace oil once and for all. Algae's natural oil content is greater than 50%, which means it can be easily extracted and processed. We can convert the remaining parts of the plant into electricity, natural gas, and even fertilizer to grow even more algae without chemicals. Algae grows quickly and doesn't need farmland or fresh water. Just last month, Alabama became the world's first algae biofuel system that can also effectively treat human wastewater. This actually resulted in a carbon negative outcome. The 40,000 a day demonstration plant basically floated giant bags on a bay, pumped wastewater into them, added a little algae, and then let the sunlight do its thing. Before long, algae had grown everywhere and cleaned the wastewater so well it could either be released back into the bay or reused by people as drinking water. Number 2, flying wind farms. We're already getting a lot of energy from the wind. But with the buoyant air turbine, or BAT, that floats 1 to 2,000 feet above the ground where winds are stronger and more consistent, we could soon be getting that energy much more efficiently. The system is simple. A ringed blimp with a wind turbine in the middle is tethered securely to the ground. They will produce twice as much power as similarly sized tower-mounted turbines. It can even handle winds of more than 100 miles per hour and can be fitted with additional devices like a Wi-Fi unit, which would help bring the internet to parts of the world that don't have it yet. The buoyant air turbine was designed for bringing renewable wind energy to rural parts of the world, where building a traditional wind turbine was impossible, and will first be deployed in Alaska. It can even automatically detect and adjust its floating height to where the best wind speed is. When the wind speed is dangerously high, the thing will dock itself, eliminating the need for manual labor. Flying wind turbines like this should soon replace all the less efficient tower-based systems and could allow for the construction of offshore wind farms that have, until now, been really expensive to build. Number 1. Fusion. Unlike fission, nuclear fusion doesn't create any deadly nuclear waste because it fuses atoms together instead of splitting them apart, so there's no threat of a runaway reaction that could lead to a meltdown event. But this is easier said than done. One Nuclear Prize-winning physicist described fusion as trying to put the sun into a box. The idea is pretty, the problem is we don't know how to make the box. The technical issue is that fusion reactions will produce material that's so volatile and hot it will damage the reactor that created it. This isn't stopping private companies and governments from spending billions to research the technology and solve these problems. And if the immense challenges can be overcome, fusion will provide virtually limitless energy and power the world. That's why the world's wealthiest governments are collaborating on the controversial International Thermonuclear Experimental Reactor in France, known as ITER. When was the last time Russia, China, Europe, and the United States collaborated on anything? That's how important for humanity this project is. And because of its revolutionary potential, several powerful companies like Lockheed Martin are quietly working on their own fusion reactors. Lockheed has a very optimistic timeline for their system, projecting that they will meet global energy demand by 2050. Their optimism may be fairly justified. In October 2013, in separate research, scientists at the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in the United States achieved a huge milestone in fusion when, for the first time, a fuel capsule gave off more energy than was applied to it. Thanks for watching. Let us know if we missed anything or if you disagreed with our rankings. And if you like this video, help the conversation spread by sharing it.
Well, I don't necessarily disagree with the concept of all these technologies possible. But what I'm just... Look, folks, I'm just telling you. Y'all being scammed. Every single person on this planet has been scammed for so doggone long, it's just ridiculous. There ain't no such thing as energy that is not renewable. It doesn't matter. Folks could sit there and argue. He just got through saying at that very last part that they actually got more energy than they needed to actually cause the reaction. It doesn't matter. Look, all this terminology like over unity and zero point and all that kind of stuff, it's a big misnomer. You know, it's like... I don't know. Somebody out there is going to have to start paying attention. They said that we're going to run out of crude oil. We've used 40% of the Earth's oil. They said we're going to run out of crude oil in 50 years. Yeah, we're not. We're not. Thomas, unmute your mic, brother.
No, I didn't know if it was okay to do that yet.
Yeah, we're not.
Man, I heard the end of that. Oh, it's fusion... Unlike fission, doesn't cause runaway, and it's safe, and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, it's not. When you get it to where you can actually get power, more power out than you put in, that's what runaway means. And it gets incredibly hot. That's what the sun's doing right now.
Yeah. So,
that's not safe.
That's
just have to build the proper safety protocols and figure out how to manage the power that's coming off it. The fission reactions are not that unsafe if they would use regular fusion or fission, but they specifically built breeder reactors to make more nuclear fuel for making bombs.
Yep, that's
all their waste, dangerous radioactive material is actually more fuel. They're generating more fuel than they need because they're turning tons of lead and other elements into plutonium.
Yeah.
You get too much, got to get it sent somewhere. They can't just, you know, let it all burn off there. That you get a runaway.
Well, they said there's like 75,000 tons of radioactive material wasted that's buried under the ground. And, you know, even if it won't run the doggone nuclear power plant like it used to, because they only use a small percentage. I think the biggest one that I heard so far was 5% of it before it is depleted enough to where it won't boil the water to the efficiency that they need. However, then they got to turn around and put it in the cooling ponds for another 10 years before they can safely store it in something else because it's generating enough heat. All right, well, that heat right there is energy that could be tapped into. While it's sitting there for 10 years cooling down, why couldn't you do something like what NASA did with the probe, sending you know radioactive piece of material inside a little thermoelectric generator that made it all the way to Pluto and took a picture and produced over 200 and some odd watts of power and was able to send that signal all the way back here?
So, because it's not as efficient as the methods they have for generating power now.
Well, who cares if it's efficient? I mean, it's still energy that could be piled in there. You put bring.
So they just need a more efficient means of converting thermal, I guess, thermal flow
yeah.
from a hot to a cold area. into electricity, that's all.
Well, I would say the biggest thing that we've got isn't the deal that we don't have enough energy. We're actually using way more amounts of energy than we need to get things done. We're under the impression that it takes a lot of current in order to run everything, but it doesn't take near the amount of power to run things that we use. We're destroying our electric fans and our compressor motors and all that kind of stuff by pushing too much power to them. We could actually solve that problem by guiding the energy away from the device. When the device reaches its maximum, and I've seen this done before, people actually tune electric motors using capacitor technology, and they notice that the draw drops down when they do this. It's not drawing as much power. But they haven't done nothing other than take a little bit of that power away from that motor so that that motor is not meeting that resistance as that energy is bouncing back and forth and making the thing go. All they did was guide some of that power away from it so that you don't have a constant amount of too much power. There's a sweet spot where every single electric motor will run, and at a temperature that where it can never reach its thermal breakdown on the insulation of the wiring, so it won't fail. I've seen this done 100 times, man.
And I've very rarely seen motors suffer from thermal breakdown on the wiring. They usually, the bearings break down from just being used and used and used and not being sealed properly, so garbage gets in there and eventually gums it up, or it wears down on it and makes it irregular, and then it's rough and falls apart. So
it's in line. When those bearings start to heat up, that heat's going to transfer its way over into the cores of the motors, or if people ain't doing regular maintenance like blowing
That's not the problem. The amount of heat it takes to cause whatever you're using for lubrication to become so viscous that it runs out of any sealed areas, any gaps in the seals, is much, much lower than the amount of heat it takes to literally break down the urethane that's coated on your magnet wire or your wire to generate your magnetic field, your enamel wire. Since Raymond likes to get on to people about saying there's no magnet in magnet wire.
the whole thing is, though, if you can actually keep that fan motor from ever getting too hot, whether it be via the bearings or you're pushing too much current to it, then it's never going to fail. You'll have that motor. I've seen motors that are...
That's not true. It is going to fail because everything that is in motion isn't self-repairing, and it is suffering from wear and tear. Even bearings that are magnetic so that there's just air around them will eventually wear out from the air bouncing against it as you spin it around.
Well, yeah, I get that, but you realize how long that thing's going to have to...
You're saying keep it cool so that it doesn't suffer a breakdown because the wire... broke down, which if you seal the wire properly, once you get done wrapping the wire in the coil and then wrap something over top of that to keep the UV rays off it, it should be fine. That urethane can handle quite a bit of heat.
Sure.
Wasting energy, though, where you're using more energy to propel it than you actually need to spin it, that would save more energy, especially since a lot of times you don't actually need the excess power on the motor to move it forward. So it's actually being forced forward at a much higher rate than it needs to be forced at.
And you can see that excess power.
What you were talking about earlier, I think, are starter capacitors.
Yeah.
Where they actually store power and build up, and then they kick off, so that way the motor can get going initially, and then after it's running, the capacitor isn't used anymore because it's literally just sipping power to keep it running rather than needing all the excess power to get the motor in motion. Like grinders use this because the wheels are solid stone. They're heavy.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of inertia you have to overcome in order to get that going. But once you've got it spinning, you don't need as much power to keep those wheels going. You just need enough energy to overcome the friction in the bearings and any kind of friction you generate from pressing something against the grinding wheel to, remove material.
Yeah, and the run capacitors, they don't get kicked out of the circuit. They stay in there constantly, and they smooth out that signal. And they give that basically a little buffer to that that device.
Well, that just means you're basically eliminating counteractive waves.
Sure.
That's all.
But it also
so kind of like if you put speakers out there and you generate an inverse wave for a sound that's already out there, it'll actually make the sound quieter. So you don't want to hook your speakers up to your sound system backwards. Like, you know, one hooked up with the positive and negative correctly, and the other one, though, is hooked up positive to the negative and negative to the positive. Well, when that sound is generated that is equalized so that both speakers are supposed to be producing the same sound to increase the volume, the one is going to be sucking in while the other one's pushing out. So it's actually going to cause a flow across between the speakers instead of out in the room, pulsing the entire room. And it'll make the rest of the room kind of quieter.
Well, with the run capacitors, those do a lot of purposes, but one of the purposes is acting as a buffer between the device and the doggone deal. My friend took a large, really large capacitor bank, and he got that electric motor to run so incredibly efficient. And it's still running at its normal speed. Because those motors only need so much power to run, all right? You're not going to get it to go any faster by putting more power to it than once it reaches its maximum. It's at its maximum, and that energy's got to go somewhere. So it bounces back and
forth. Hold on. Yeah, the type of motor I think you're talking about, the speed is based on the pulse wave, the rate that the pulse wave is running at. So it can only run as fast as the pulses. Or continuously pushing it forward. If you start injecting more speed into it, then basically the motor's out of sync with the pulses.
Yeah.
So it just constantly kind of magnetically locking it to a certain rate. But if you increase the pulse rate, if you increase the frequency of the pulses, then you can increase the speed of the motor until you hit the threshold that that power that's going in is not enough to keep it going, and it'll fall out of phase, and then you'll end up wasting a bunch of power and burning something out, or it'll start trying to spin backwards.
Yep.
It'll slow down and then wind backwards, and then, you know, you get another completely different problem.
But
so,
nonetheless, it still leaves a lot of room for improvement in efficiency.
Well, yeah, you don't need that pulse the entire time. You need a set amount of pulse in the beginning to reverse the magnetic field that's left over in the material in the core. And then a real small spike toward the middle, and that's it.
Yep.
So if you could literally create a wave that is like a square wave that only goes up, say, 25% of the distance from the center, where, you know, as opposed to what you're used to seeing, where you gradually build until you hit 100% and gradually go back down, and then have a very short square wave that's like maybe 1/10 of the length of the entire pulse, that's twice the distance, twice as much power within that tiny frame, and then back down to that zero mark and going a quarter over on the other side to start knocking the magnetic field out of the other side, but not enough to overcome the magnetic energy, the inertia you put into it from that sharp pulse. You could probably increase the efficiency of a motor dramatically using that, an AC motor.
For
you just need a different type of AC wave to do that.
For what purpose would anybody in the industry not care whether or not they could make something incredibly efficient? The only explanation that
because it works good enough is good enough. That's why.
That's the
real reason. It's more money and more time and more effort, more energy on their part. And humans are inherently lazy. That's why we have remote controls, though. There is a positive side to being lazy, is that it promotes you to do things as efficiently as possible.
Yeah.
So, and there is only a limited amount of energy, according to every theory that's out there, to the universe, and eventually that energy will be used up, and then the universe will wind down. So if we slow down the consumption of that energy, we extend the lifespan of the universe, giving everybody enough more time to get their crap in order.
Well,
before they have to meet the maker, I guess.
All I'm saying is if the sun has been producing energy all these years, to me, the sun is free energy. It's been going and going and going and going and still going better than the Energizer Bunny. And so if we focused energies into storage, which I know we got storage already solved, our capacitor technology and graphene technology is getting so incredible the different types of chemistry batteries, I'm thinking at some point in time, those chemistry batteries are going to go by the wayside. They're going to be, you know, like the dinosaur, extinct. Because the modern day boost caps that they got out here, these things are incredible. They work just like batteries and they don't get hot. And if you understand how to use these things, there's multiple different capacitors for multiple different purposes, but I'm able to take a 5-volt DDS signal generator, push out approximately 9-volt signal on a square wave at 60 hertz, and run a microwave oven transformer that then in turn ramps that voltage up, drops the current down, and pressurizes those capacitors that basically then turn goes through a bridge rectifier and changes it from an AC signal to a DC signal, and then sends it on into the other style of capacitors that stores a lot of voltage, and then that voltage then in turn bleeds over into the boost caps and charges them up. And from that point on, you can run your devices with it. You can charge batteries with it. And
I would say we could probably save a lot of energy by simply people learning how to basically flush bearings.
You mean by basically doing maintenance?
Yeah, a minor amount of maintenance will basically increase the efficiency of the motor dramatically. Just take the motor, make sure your motors are built so they can be taken apart, first of all,
yeah,
instead of being a bunch of folded tab metal and whatnot, so that every time you bend it, it creases and damages the metal until eventually it ends up cracking and breaking off. Put things together with bolts and screws, man. I mean, that's why I don't build even things out of wood with nails. I hate nails. Nails are annoying. You know?
Yeah.
Screws, I can take something apart and re-engineer it if I have to. If something's not quite right or if my need changes, I just bust out the screwdriver, pull the screw out, and then make my adjustments and then screw everything back together. If I need to put some new holes, so be it. If I don't need new holes, even better, you know? I have a method I used actually pretty effectively of just putting WD-40 on the roller bearings out of like roller blades. They're also used in skateboards now too. They're just like, you know, a little short cylinder. What are they? Let me see. I've got one here. I've got a Z rating. What the heck was it? Z708, I think, is what they are, or something like that. They've got different numbers on them and all that nonsense, but none of that really matters. The fact is, you've got a bunch of balls that are sitting inside of a little racetrack, and crap gets stuck in between the racetrack and the ball. And if you take some WD-40 and drop it down where you can see the sleeve of the inside and the outside race of that racetrack, is that it will go through and wash the material out, and then just run some regular oil in there when you're done with all that. Like, let it set and dry out as best you can, but then put a little bit of oil in there so that way when the WD-40 completely dries out, it doesn't leave you with dry bearings. And then put them back into service, you know?
Yeah.
Put them right back into service and use them again. Don't let them run until they're making grinding noises either.
They got some really incredible synthetic lubrications nowadays that are mind-blowing. I remember it was probably back in, say, the late 80s, early 90s, when there was this guy that was out there on at the market, and he was showing people this specific type of lube. One of the versions was DuraLube, and there's some different names, brands of it. But he was showing...
Oh my God, stay away from DuraLube.
Well,
unless they've changed their formula to use the stuff Prolong is using,
yeah,
you do not want to use DuraLube, because it will eventually wear off of the part and it leaves nitrogen all over the surface, which is a catalyst
for
oxygen and iron, and it will cause everything to rust to crap really fast. Prolong is fluorine-based, so it doesn't let the oil that it's attached to slide off.
Yeah, I get all that, but the key was that...
Yeah, I got you. But you know what that doesn't stop, though? That doesn't stop the sticky nature of the oil from causing any kind of dust that comes into the bearing from getting stuck in there and turning into a gritty, gummy substance.
Well, see, and that's...
You still got to flush it. You still got to clean it out.
That's where knowledge like you got in chemistry would come in handy, because either way, he showed a lot of friction tests that would have otherwise destroyed or started wearing things down with the standard lubrication that everybody uses in their motors.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we have that type of technology. There's better synthetic oils nowadays that you can get a hold of that, you know, if you know what you're looking for, you can get those bearings to last for a long, long time. And, you know, most of the bearings that you see nowadays are sealed bearings, so they got a lifespan on them. If they ever get hot and those seals break and all the grease drips out and you don't know about it, the bearing will fail. But if there was a way to, you know, reseal them somehow and, you know, re-lubricate them every so often, heck, you wouldn't have to worry about them failing.
I've seen plenty of them fail without the seal failing, though, because the seal's not complete.
Yeah.
Unless you're talking about, like, a rubber seal, which isn't a very effective seal. The steel seals are the best ones, but they also, like I said, they have a gap. That's why they work. If they had no gap, then you wouldn't be able to turn the part because you'd have steel on steel.
Yeah, I get
so
all that.
So, you just need to clean the bearing out. An upgrade to that process I was talking about earlier would be to stick your bearings down inside of a little plastic tube so that it's pressed tight into the tube like a piece of vinyl tubing. Put a threaded rod through it and then fill the tube up with WD-40 and then just sit there and gently rotate the threaded rod. And that will help promote the flow through the bearing of the WD-40, which will wash everything out and leave you with nothing but bearings and races, which then when you put your oil in there, you don't have any gummy grit anymore. Now you can get another, you know, 5-10 years out of that bearing.
Well, I'll tell you what, I had a drive shaft in my wife's Explorer or Mountaineer go bad. And what ended up happening was the doggone, all the grease leaked out of it, and it was quite literally burning up the bearings.
And yeah, because you had metal on metal.
Even though these bearings were burned up, cracked, and pitted, I needed to be able to try to get a few extra miles out of this doggone drive shaft because they were really expensive. So what I did was, I went down in there and I put some really heavy duty grease. I mean, I packed that thing you couldn't get any more in there. Sealed that thing up really good, put a new boot on it, and that thing has been going for over a year and a half now, and it should have already been a bad...
Right, you put enough pressure between the parts that the grease is what's taking the brunt of the contact, so...
So it's still working, you know?
You could probably put some aluminum dust in there, and any time that aluminum is getting pressed into those cavities, it'll actually bond to it and create a smoother surface.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea at all. But the key is, there are all kinds of ways to not only prolong the life of all your equipment, but if you get into where actual energy and you understand that these devices don't need near the amount of power that we're shoving to them, these fans they'll work on less than 120 volts AC. It's coming at the right signal. It's coming at the right time. You don't need that much power to run that fan. But nonetheless, we still shove that much to it. And that does cause some heat to start building up on there. And that heat will keep on adding after long. If you're running for hours and hours and days on end, not doing any kind of maintenance to whatever, you know, something's got to give. Eventually it's going to fail, whether it be the bearings or, you know, the doggone motor itself has got too much power running to it and it gets hot. And it only takes one of those wires, some of the coating on one of those wires to start to break down. It'll start shorting it down. And when it does, there you go.
Now, you're talking about fans, man. A fan will work a lot better if the fan is drawing air in toward the blade side.
Yeah.
And the cowling that's in the center is large enough that the air will flow around the motor and away from it, so that way you're not sucking dust into your fan.
Yeah.
So that's how the difference between a server fan for a computer that's a server and a regular case fan for your home computer is that the fans are actually reversed the direction they draw the air through. So the dust that gets sucked through a fan on a home computer is actually going up into your motor.
I've seen electric motors dating way back into the 1800s, the late 1800s, electric motors that still work just as well today as they did back then. And that shows some really quality craftsmanship. These things, And some of them actually have...
Or they're underpowered, like that light bulb in that firehouse that lasted for, over 100 years of being on constantly.
Yeah.
It was also running like 25% under its capacity load, what it would be rated for if it were a modern lamp.
Did it keep anybody from stubbing their toe?
Well, yeah.
Well, then it did its job.
That's what I'm saying, though. They overbuilt it. Obviously, light companies are not interested in overbuilding things, so you never have to buy any more light bulbs from them.
Bingo.
The only reason they would be willing to do that is if they could stop selling light bulbs and just rent them.
Yeah.
So that way, as long as you're using, you have to keep paying them something for using it.
That's it.
So
the whole thing
it's no longer
money.
A product; it's a service.
The whole thing is about getting some money.
It is.
What I've been trying to say about all these what they call renewable energy sources like wind and solar. It's not that they're not good, and we do have storage capability beyond everybody's imagination, but. People just aren't listening. And the industry, they're not going to tell you that it's possible.
Well, hey, you mentioned the solar. I think that's probably our biggest problem there is not being able to maintain. Because the phosphorus on the standard solar cell wears out from UV damage.
Well, sure.
And the boron and the silicon itself is still good. So you could technically take... Every solar cell that's has basically failed to generate enough power, strip the coating off the top of it and phosphate it, and have a brand new solar cell all over again, and then drop more connectors on the surface to collect that potential on the phosphorus side.
Well, just like nature recycles everything. I don't see anything as waste anymore. I mean, it's only waste if you throw it in the trash and don't use it. Sounded like you got a cat in the background. Yeah. But it's only waste if you don't use it. And all these losses in the system can be re-engineered if people really seriously want to get into it. There's still room for improvements on just about everything under the sun. And so it's going to take something that I don't think humanity is quite ready for in order to be able to give basically everybody what I call free energy. People are going to argue with me till they're blue in the face. There ain't no such thing as free energy, but I beg to differ because this planet's been doing things since what they said billions of years, all right? If it's been doing what it's doing for billions of years, it's still making crude oil. It's still making water. It's still doing all the chemistry still there. No matter what you did to it, it's still there. And nature mixes it all back in and does it again. So, everything's renewable as far as I'm concerned. And, the sooner we figure that out, the sooner we figure the system out, it'll be the sooner people start getting together and making a people's type of power company, You invest in the equipment, you invest in the maintenance, and you, from that point on, once everything's taken care of, right now, since a lot of these are public utilities or whatever, maybe at some point, your light bill should have at least went down instead of going up. But they keep telling you it cost them more for fuel, it cost them more for coal, it cost them more for whatever. And I don't agree. Ain't nothing you can say to get me to agree. Because once you got it, the hydroelectric dam, that river doesn't stop flowing. You might have to pay some folks to get in there and maintain things like bearings or whatever. But the system shouldn't get more expensive every single year. It shouldn't happen like that. But it does. And thousands, if not millions of dollars, go into all types of researches other than research that's going to show something new. We got to get some, people got to get their act together. If you're ever going to want to see this world, get to the, point where you're not paying hundreds of dollars per month on your doggone electric bill. And we find the doggone sweet point in the doggone energy that's coming out of the wall socket to the whatever appliance that you want to run, and you're only using the amount of power necessary to actually run that device instead of cramming 120 volts constant back and forth to that doggone transformer, causing that transformer to get hot. It's, you're pushing current through that. It's going to get hot. Well, eventually something's got to give. That radio that you're using doesn't need near that amount of power to run it. And so, just in the delivery of the energy itself, we're pushing more power to these machines than they actually need. And that includes these doggone computers down here. If it's got heat popping out of the back of it, and that heat ain't being guided to where you want it to go, you know, you got to get the heat away from them processors. Why do you got to get the heat away from them? Eventually they're going to fail because they get too hot, and they fail. But if you keep that doggone transistor or the MOSFET or the processors or 555 chips or whatever type of electrical device you got from reaching its thermal breakdown, it'll last and it'll continue to do the job. That bridge rectifier that's in that circuit over there is rated at 1,000 volts at 100 amps. So I can run 100 amps worth of current through that bridge rectifier at 1,000 volts before it will get hot and fail. Under the circumstances on how I'm actually running it, those rectifiers will do the same exact job with just the voltage alone. They don't need all that current to change that from an AC to a DC. And since I'm using that energy differently on the system the way that I'm using it, I'm storing it, and then I'm putting it back into a method by which to get the current back to it, because I got a lot of, I'm using them like batteries. Alright, well, now I can run an electric motor real time off of these doggone things. And once I understand that I can store as much energy as I want, depending on the size of the bank that I got, well then, I can run it on demand. And as long as I keep putting energy to it, it'll never go dry. You know, and so you've got more than enough power to do what it is you need to do. You're just not cramming too much current to a device that isn't designed to handle that kind of constant current. Current's what causes things to get hot. It's too much resistance. And that's why that nichrome wire and the tungsten elements are used, because of the way that they're designed to resist current flow. And that current, trying to shove that current through there, causes it to get really hot. And it'll glow, so it's either in a light bulb or it's in some sort of wire cutter or electric heater. You can even get them doggone electric heaters to be more efficient. They don't require that much amount of power in order to run. When you're using that power off of the outlet and that power has got nowhere to go, that heat is going to transfer from that heater back down that wire to that outlet. And that's why every so often, if you ain't paying attention, there's these wall outlets that get these burn marks on there. That dang thing's getting hot. It's melting the socket. They don't make them like they used to with ceramics and stuff. Now, they're like little cheap old plastic sockets. They're not made for that, and they're dangerous because they could actually start a wire fire. But if you was using that heater properly, heat is an amazing thing. Well, if you go look back and look at my video, Redneck Hot Tub, I took a coffee pot element and I took an old bathtub that holds quite a few gallons of water, and I filled that thing completely up and I started circulating water through that coffee pot element. And it took a long time, about 4 hours or more, in order to get that hot tub up to operating temperature. But once I got it up to operating temperature, in the dead of winter, with snow and ice out there on the ground, with no insulation under the tub, no insulation around the tub, and open to the atmosphere, I was able to sit in that thing in the dead of winter in my swimming shorts and be warm. And that doggone coffee pot element maintained the temperature of that pool in those harsh conditions. And if you left it on too long, the water would get too hot for you to sit in it, because that heat just keeps building up and storing, and it keeps that water constantly agitated, constantly hot. And so, you know, at a certain point, you had to reach over and turn that thing off and leave it off for a while, wait for the temperature to start dropping back down. When the temperature started dropping back down, you flip it back on, and bam, there you go. You got a warm hot tub. But that, you know, a lot of people miss the point of that actual video. You know, I put Redneck Hot Tub and it's got a lot of views on it. My Redneck Wind Turbine got a lot of views on it. Maybe I'd call everything Redneck. I might get some attention. But, you know, when you go to understanding the exact physics of what's going on down there, that heat works the same way no matter what you're doing. Where is that? Whether it's in your computer, in your wall socket, in your wiring, in your devices. And it's only wasted energy if you're not using it. That's it. And so that hot tub, as far as I'm concerned, is an incredibly efficient way to use what voltage in the current that I was pushing to that deal. And even the coffee pot element itself has a thermal switch on it. And so if it gets too hot, it'll shut itself off. And then when it cools back down, it'll turn itself back on, so it's self-regulating so it don't start a wire fire. But even to that extent, I didn't need near the amount of power that that wall outlet was pushing to that thing to get that thing to do what it is that it's doing. It didn't take that much power. But if we got that mindset out there that we weren't necessarily shooting for the holy grail of free energy devices, but we shoot for extreme efficiency, that's where we're going to win. We start re-engineering things and really understanding how energy is moving from point A to point B and what's actually really going on. We can get these doggone devices that we got to last multitudes longer with just a little bit of maintenance. We can keep these things lasting longer, which will save us some money that we could then in turn reinvest into building another type of system or whatever. And we pulled our resources together, then there's nothing that we can't accomplish. That's what I'm saying. So let's see. You still there, Thomas? Did I lose you?
Yeah, you lost me.
Anyway, well, there's always room for improvement of efficiency. We shoot for maximum efficiency, and I believe that's where we're going to succeed. All these other newer technologies, I'm telling you, it's coming. Whether the industry likes it or not, they're going to mess up and they're going to put the right device in the right place at the right time, and people are going to realize, hey, this thing will do more than they thought it would. Those see-through windows that they've got, they're working on the solar panels, I can't wait till those come in, because I'm going to put them in my car and let those windows do some work of charging up the battery and keeping my alternator from having to kick on so much. Even if it only takes it away a quarter of the time, at least it's working charging the battery constantly, so the alternator is saving me a little bit of fuel. Because every time that alternator kicks on, your fuel cost goes up because your engine has to work harder. And you keep it from ever having to kick on by using solar technology to keep your batteries charged up, you're going to save some fuel. And even if it's only a few cents a day, heck, a few cents more than you had yesterday, right? What do you think, Thomas?
Are you trying to throw me under a bus?
No, I'm saying, what do you?
I don't like it under the bus.
I'm saying, what do you think about if, like, Muddy came up with the idea a long time ago? He put a solar panel on the roof of his pickup truck, and he used that solar panel to charge his battery to get him to and from work, and he saved fuel because his alternator never had to kick on.
I would have to do some testing to see if that's actually that effective. I'd be more concerned about using the solar panel to keep the run an air conditioning unit inside the vehicle to keep it cool whenever it's not on.
Well, even to that extent, if you can get it to do anything that requires electricity in the cab of that vehicle, then that makes it more efficient. So, what if you took and they had the newer types of solar panels that are actually made where they're more bendable, they're like film, and you could actually cover your entire body or your car, so no matter which direction you're facing, you're pulling in some power. You know what I mean?
You could use that, if you work that out, you could use that process I was talking about where you're actually using aluminum oxide instead of silicon.
Yeah.
That way you could take an aluminum body and turn it into a giant solar cell where the aluminum body, the aluminum of the body is basically one of the electrodes.
Yep.
That way it's contoured to the shape of whatever it is that it's made out of.
And at the very least, even if it only supplemented the power to extend the electric car, you know, maybe you get an extra few miles out of, you know, a charge of power because it's putting power back in. You know, that's the whole thing. Not to mention, there's all different types of technology from the Van de Graaff to the Wimshurst to the old Lord Kelvin device to the Hawksbee device, old ways of generating a static charge that you could replicate by using, you know, the friction of the tires across the ground, or even certain types of you know, technologies available, you know, to, you know, pick up extra power, store that power, and then when the power gets you know, high enough in, let's say, a capacitor bank, then it'll kick over a transistor that'll pulse a coil or whatever and put a little surge into the, even if it's only trickle charging, it doesn't matter. It's not that, you know, it's how we're using the energy that's the problem. It's not that we ain't got enough. We got more than enough energy than we never use. But hey, it is what it is. You know, the world, the science world out there, I know they know what I'm talking about. I know the industry knows what I'm talking about. But there's reasons they don't want to make things to last long time or be really super efficient. Heck, if I was selling gasoline, I'd want you to have a gas hog for a car so I could make more money. You know? Why would I want to...
See, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Why not?
Because if it's cheap to travel,
yeah,
people are going to do more travel.
Yeah, but if,
you get what I'm saying? They'll look at it as, well, I'm getting all this value out of it, so it's okay that I'm spending more money on gas than I would if I didn't go and do anything because I was driving a big gas hog.
Well, that would work in a common sense world. But I don't think we're in a common sense world. I think...
Oh, you think we're in a clown world?
I think...
Honk, honk.
I think we're getting close to the movie Idiocracy. I'm afraid we're going that route.
You apparently don't know what I'm talking about. There are people in the leftist community that are feeling they're being left homeless because politically, because the left has gotten so completely insane, leaning so far over to the extreme left that they're just like, oh, you're not with us, then you're a right-wing nut job.
Huh.
Like, what are you talking about, man? You guys have lost your mind.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I'm seeing a version of that movie.
That's where the concept comes from, is that they're saying that the world is getting so politically insane, we're living in a clown world.
We're living
in a parody of reality.
I guess that's job security for mad science.
No, what we're talking about is job security for people who got degrees in things that basically are not STEM, like political science or gender studies, stuff like that. You know, there's not a whole lot of jobs in reality for things like that, so the people that we're talking about, it's believed that, and remember, I'm saying that this is an opinion, but it's, you know, because I haven't seen any real study or even wasted any effort to do any studying on it, but the opinion is that basically they're creating a ruckus so that there's a need for them, like at, you know, corporations, to keep them from, you know, suffering from an outrage mob. So they create the outrage mob so that basically now they need people to protect them from the outrage mob. It's kind of like the mafia coming by and saying, hey, we see you got a business here in town. You know, we run a insurance company to make sure that your knees get checked constantly and, you know, you don't suffer any injuries to those knees while they're swinging a little hammer around.
Huh.
You know, kind of like, yeah, you don't, wouldn't want maybe somebody accidentally hit you in the knees with a hammer, so, you know, you want to give us some insurance money to keep that from happening. We'll make sure it doesn't happen. You know? You don't pay your insurance, man. You know, somebody might come by and check your knees, man.
Man, I'll tell you what, that sounds like the system, though.
Yeah.
Sounds just like it.
Well, and that's what I'm saying, though, is it's not something new. It's not, none of it's, there's nothing new under the sun when it comes to this kind of nonsense. You know? They might repackage it so it looks new, but it's not actually new, you know? So,
you know, renewable energy, I'm saying, I don't care, you know, everything's renewable energy, it doesn't matter what it is.
I hate how political nonsense has to intersect into real hard science like this.
Yeah.
Because we keep trying to take it to a grander scale. We need to bring the science down to a personal level so we don't have to have politics in it.
Well,
it's a politics of one.
That sure would be beneficial. You know,
well, that's why I've been working on that 3D printer. And the recycling system to go with it, and the energy harvesting system to go with it, because the hope is to have one that's portable and small enough an individual can manage, maintain, and own one all by themselves. They can literally like throw it in the back of a van or the trunk of a car or whatever.
Yeah.
And just hit the road, man. Oh, your phone broke? You got the data file, just feed the old phone in, break it down, print a new one out. There, fixed phone,
You get on YouTube and you look up free energy, and you're going to see so much ridiculousness. It's just crazy. There's one guy out there that I used to kind of like his channel, Electro Boom, and he's always replicating some of these bogus free energy devices. It makes it kind of comedic and whatever. But anyway, before it's all said and done, he bashes free energy, and if you scroll down and look at some of the other ones out there, there's all kinds of people out there who are getting thousands and thousands of views on ridiculous free energy devices. I mean, they're blatantly obvious ridiculous, and most of generally it's when they're putting batteries up inside of light bulbs or electric motors and saying, look, you wrap this copper wire around this and that makes the free energy device. And
right. The only way you can validate for certain that something operates properly is to either A, build it yourself, or B, go physically there and test it, which costs a lot of time and energy to do it. So that's why I came up with a plan for attracting somebody to come and look at a free energy device without them investing fully in every single claim. They can literally vet based on the system so they can cut down on the amount of false claims that they're wasting time with and focus on the ones that have more potential validity, which is don't obfuscate anything. Make sure everything is as transparent as possible. Anything that can be transparent, build it out of that transparent substance so that it can be seen in operation.
Yep.
And then do live streaming like on Skype or Discord or Talks if you want to keep it private.
Yeah, that's
which, just so you know, Talks is decentralized. It uses the individual clients to ping its messages back and forth from one user to the next, and it encrypts everything and breaks it up in chunks so that way no node has enough of the encryption to even try to decrypt it, let alone go through the hassle and the computational power of testing every single possible option until they finally find the decryption code and finish breaking the code. So
well, that's why I've gone out of my way to whenever I'm building these projects, generators and stuff, I'm actually building one with a plexiglass casing and all see-through stuff, because there's a certain portion of this that I want people to be able to see mechanically what is actually occurring, so that there's nobody saying, oh, well, you got hidden this or hidden that. The whole thing is about the way that this generates electricity is not the standard model of generator, and what I'll be able to do with it is what I'm trying to share. But I don't want anybody saying, well, you got a hidden wire here or whatever. I want them to see it. I want them to see inside this thing, like you said, transparent, where you can see inside, you can see mechanically what's going on.
Right. Well, the purpose of the live stream is so that you can... initially, my thought was so that basically they can ask questions and have you tilt and move the camera around to look at different areas if there's something they can't see.
Yeah.
But the other the main reason for doing that would be to eliminate the possibility of dubbing. Because there are a couple out there where they use plenty of transparent solid materials, but they don't use transparent sound, meaning they're not recording the live sound and then rebroadcasting that with the video in sync. So you can't tell that they've, off-camera, got an air compressor blowing on the thing.
Yeah, yeah,
I get that. Stuff like that. So, I mean, everything has to be unobfuscated as much as possible, not just the physical objects themselves, like the device itself, but everything, including the audio, needs to be unobfuscated. So the best way to verify that it's unobfuscated is that it's live, right there on the spot. You're talking to the person right then and there while they're running it. You can hear the thing clicking and whirring away and, you know, have them pick it up and rotate it around, turn the camera around, make sure there ain't no fans in the room, that kind of nonsense, you know?
Yep, I'm hip to that. But, you know, all these bogus free energy devices, I think it was Violance in the chat room said that YouTube's probably manipulating view results, which wouldn't surprise me none. But, you know, for whatever purpose that they would have to be involved.
Hold on, YouTube has already admitted that they're going to start manipulating the search results to get rid of what they consider to be fake news and conspiracy theories.
Well, if that's the case, then they should really get on these doggone ones like this. But
no. See, you're calling for power.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying.
And you're calling for concentration of power. They need to just stop getting on to anybody and let people make their own decisions.
I get what you're saying, but I'm saying.
Right. If you give somebody power, you give them the ability to abuse. That's the thing.
I don't want to give them any power, but listen to what I'm saying here. Hear me out.
Okay.
What they got going on right now basically makes me look bad. All right, because I say free energy.
Only if somebody doesn't take the time to actually examine.
I get that, but
everything.
Let me finish.
They have to do their own thinking.
Let's say that they start. Because of you know what I just said about, you know, these being bogus devices. When they put that category like free energy into
they basically regulate you out. So if you have something that's not fake,
yeah,
you're getting blocked, and that's exactly what I was saying. You don't want to give them that power
because they
will block everyone. Let individuals have the power.
Don't tell
people what they're allowed to see and what they're not allowed to see. That's nonsense.
That's what I was ultimately trying to get to. It's like this method right here.
You know where this all started, right?
Well, during the ad apocalypse, there was all kinds of crud going down.
The first thing that I can remember being something that caused the beginning of the censorship with all this stuff was the beheading videos.
Yeah.
Instead of censoring those out, what they should have done was use those to go catch those people and eliminate them so they wouldn't keep doing that.
Yeah.
Whether you're locking them up or whatever, pedophilia. Use that system of them coming together and talking about this nonsense to go catch them, so you'll save the children that they would otherwise predate on.
Because
yep. if you censor them there, they will just go deeper and hide and make it harder for you to find them, man.
Yeah.
You know?
But
anything that's going on out there that shouldn't be going on, expose it. That's the best way to put a stop to it, is to put a light to it. Cockroaches like to hide.
Well,
you know, don't give them anywhere to hide. Make everything open so everybody can see everything that's going on.
The sad thing is that the amount of views that these people get and make the amount, some of them are like ad farms. You go on to some of these videos and they got probably 20 ads on one video. And it's just making, just wiring crud together and hiding batteries inside
yep.
here. But
it's called the constant and ever hunt for those delicious clicks.
Yeah. And that's but
they that's why you keep hearing about Trump in the news.
But them doing
look up the phrase chasing the Trump bump.
Yeah. but in the process of them doing that, it waters down anyone who's really seriously doing research. And so how are we ever going to get to what they keep claiming they need? We need clean, renewable, alternative energy sources. There are people out there working on it. And how are you going to get there when it's all muddied up? It's either
right.
muddied up by jerks faking stuff, or it's muddied up by people trying to regulate people faking stuff, or, you know...
Right. Well, now see, listen, man. That's what curation is for. Okay, if you have the time, then you can go and look at some videos and go to a site that you know is open, like say it's an encrypted site using blockchain technology so that you cannot erase what's put on the site once it's put there. No one can remove it, because if they remove something, it breaks the entire thing and the whole site will go down, right?
Yeah.
Because it's all mathematically built in stages, where basically you have to have the previous stages in order for the latter stages to exist.
Yeah.
Okay. And you put a system where basically you start rating videos on their quality and whatnot, so that anybody who has time to look at a video, well, they can go and link that video in there and put a rating on it and a little, a real tiny blurb, like, or even just have a radio button system, like, you know, that lets people search it. You know what I mean? So that way you can search for things that are legitimate versus things that are not, and other people can come along and go, oh, I watched that too, and here's my rating for it. I watched that, here's my rating for it. So now the rating goes up if it's a legitimate video, and it goes down if it's an illegitimate video.
Well, that's where
meaning that people who are trying to muddy the waters will have to work a whole lot harder, because now they not only have to flood the world with a whole bunch of these junk videos, but then they have to turn around and all gang up on those things to review bombing on it to get it to tip the scale the other direction.
Yeah.
And that will just cause people who are serious about using it for its usefulness to start review bombing back.
Yeah.
You know, where they're going in and reversing the rating by, you know, adding additional rating the way it should have been initially, you know?
Well, had YouTube had left things alone, these things would have spoke for themselves. But then they started monkeying around, putting artificial intelligence or whatever, those AIs running algorithms, and basically killed YouTube. I mean, after the adpocalypse, you can't even hardly make any money on YouTube unless you're one of the large channels and you got YouTube behind them, you know, helping them to the top, you know. Because even those channels would go down after a while if they were allowed to be done with what has happened in the alternative energy research portion of it. So maybe it's an intentional shove us to the bottom and make us look stupid. It's like calling somebody a tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy. You know, there are real conspiracies in the world. There really are people who conspire to do things. But you talk about it, suddenly you're a paranoid tinfoil hat. And when you talk about free energy, any of those terminologies come up, you Google them, and you'll start getting all the debunking and everything. Oh, it's not possible. It's against the physics or whatever.
Hey, I don't have a problem with debunking videos as long as they go into why.
Yeah.
Because that actually educates people on how things work so that they can maybe work harder on finding a loophole.
Yeah, but
If you don't know why something is failing, you'll never figure out how to make it succeed.
But everything out there isn't bogus, and the ones that are really worthy of taking a look at are basically in a sea of garbage. And so,
well, as I say, I know it's kind of a negative thing to use, but guided missiles get to their destination by constantly failing and recognizing their failure and correcting to eliminate that failure.
Yeah. Well, it's a little hard whenever you're into alternative energy to swallow the pill of renewable energy sources when I paid attention in science class. Nature recycles everything. Everything gets recycled into the system. It don't matter what it is. You know, you take any two chemicals, you get a chemical reaction, you might make another chemical, but eventually nature's going to break it down. It might take a little longer for some as opposed to others. But when you burn firewood, you come out the other side with two more products. And eventually, those products get worked back into the system. And so, there you go. You know, it's all been renewable. And
I think the problem is that people don't realize there is, in the current model, there is a set amount of energy, and the system isn't about using up that energy. It's about expanding the energy and contracting the energy. So you need something to do a contraction, you need something to do an expansion. Star is a very good example of a contraction, because the fusion that's going on is because of intense gravitational pull, which forms from intense amounts of matter existing very close together, because it kept the attraction kept pulling in more and more material until eventually it grew to the mass that it reached.
Yeah.
Now you got that concentration of that expanded energy from the universe that was considered useless because it had been spent. It's now being recycled as now a spendable object again, because it's getting concentrated again. Same thing with CO2 and the plants, and then the plants basically the ones that manage to get buried and pressed underground so they can be heated and compressed and turned into more oil.
Yep.
Or coal or some other carbon substance. I mean, we do this in labs and in factories now where we make, you know, carbon, you know, components like graphite or breaking down materials and not letting them react so you end up with a more powerful substance like, say, alcohol out of wood. You know?
Yep.
So we know that that's possible for the Earth to be doing that. Whether that's how it's formed or not is still a contention because nobody's been able to get down there and actually do testing and set up a lab and, you know, track the process until it completes. It might be, you know, interactive biology that just keeps feeding off of each other until eventually you end up with a soup that neither one can exist and they all die off and now you have a pure hydrocarbon mixture called oil.
Yep.
Then that stuff starts soaking up a bunch of nonsense that it comes into contact with because it's a solvent. And it absorbs, you know, salts and stuff like that from, like, you know, everything from mercuric oxide to copper sulfate or whatever. And you end up with this black sludge instead of the honey yellow color that it should have been.
Well, the whole thing is, though, they say we're going to run out of crude oil in 50 years. And I say we are never going to run out of it unless this planet stops doing what it has been doing all this time.
Right, that's not the issue. This is, again, another misnomer, man. If you talk to a real scientist, have a real heart-to-heart with them that actually understands that, they will tell you it's not a matter of running out of oil that the planet is generating. It's a matter of running out of the oil that can be reached because we haven't given enough time for the new oil or the newer oil to surface. You got to wait till geology, the geological functions of the Earth shift around enough to let that oil come back up to where we can get to it, while the stuff that is not oil, it is still being pushed down until it reaches a point where it can be turned into oil. So you just need to hurry that process up.
Sure.
Or reduce our consumption so that we're using it at a slower rate than the Earth generates it until we come up with another way of generating it, like, say, roping an asteroid.
It's big enough so it's
generating oil too, and we can extract it from it.
I believe we have the technology to quite literally mimic what nature does in a lab and actually make our own crude oil. So, you know,
they're already doing it.
So I'm not even remotely worried about us ever running out of it. But that's not the point. The point is this: if you want to take even what we've got now, and you take these engines and you specifically engineer them to be incredibly efficient. I mean super incredibly efficient. You don't need the amount of fuel that's shoved down these cars, otherwise you wouldn't need a catalytic converter. Now, whenever you push the gasoline through those injectors, you're pushing too much fuel in there, and the faster that engine runs, it shortens the time that it has to make a complete burn. So by rights, the faster you go, the harder you push down on that gas pedal, the less fuel you should be using. But that's not the way the injection system works. It then in turn opens up airway and pushes more air in there to compensate for the too much fuel so that you're not running too lean or whatever. And so that's why you have things like an O2 sensor and a doggone catalytic converter in the vehicle, is to try to compensate for that. So you got this really fast car, you're going really fast, and you're wasting fuel so ridiculously fast, most of it's going out the exhaust pipe, some of it gets guided back around and reburned into the intake. But if you knew and understood how the physics of that engine was actually working, there's only one place you need the heat, and that's in the combustion chamber. The rest of it is all wasted energy. And so if you get this thing incredibly tuned and engineered, I know they can do it. I've seen what they've done on racetracks. I've seen what they've done with water injection and everything like that. And so there are still room for improvement in the auto industry, that even if you were going to use what they call fossil fuel, which I completely disagree with, but I don't care. Even if you're going to use that, you can get these engines to be so incredibly efficient that you wouldn't need near the amount of fuel used in order to run these vehicles. Plain and simple. So, that's where I'm at. Anyway, we're getting down there. We've got like 5 minutes left to go, and then those of you that's listening in right now, stay tuned for the Kara Music with Kara Hour, and then after that, the Hope Show. She'll be calling in via Skype on that one there, because she's still recovering from her surgery. But either way, the show must go on, so to speak. So, Thomas, I think we got some incredible technology, and I'm really excited about your 3D printing ideas, and one day be able to throw your, you know, wasted what would have otherwise been wasted materials, that then in turn this device could actually use those materials to actually make new products. I think that's incredible. And I know
it's a sovereignty thing, though, you know. You can claim back your sovereignty from all those corporations that you buy stuff that have barcodes on them.
Yeah.
All you need is a data file. And once you learn how things work, the things that you do understand how they work, you can make modifications to them.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing those days.
Same here. That's why I'm working as hard as I am on it.
So, I'm knocking things off in the floor, trying to get ready for a second show. I needed to know something. Anyway, another fascinating mad science show. I hope you guys and gals weren't offended. I get a little crazy sometimes, but I'm looking at, in my eyes, I'm seeing the movie. I wish I had never saw it, but doggone movie, Idiocracy. It just drives me insane. Look, I paid attention in science class.
It's what plants crave.
Yeah, they do. You gotta give them Gatorade.
Electrolytes.
Electrolytes. Yeah. If you
No. You have to say it right if you're talking about Idiocracy. It's electrolytes.
Yeah. Folks, if you haven't seen the movie Idiocracy, I don't really recommend it. But if you want to find out what it is, then go take a peek at it, because when you watch the show,
it's a comedy, a comedic look at a nightmarish future.
Yeah. And that feels like that's where we're going. Now, maybe our saving grace will be the artificial intelligence that will think for us and do things for us until it's tired.
Oh, God. Don't go down that road.
Well,
save that for tomorrow's show, man. You're getting way too deep into political territory.
I'm saying one of these days.
You ought to do a one of the shows that are more, you know, policy and politics and about science rather than about the actual mechanics of science.
Do you know
about the social credit system and what's going on with that right now?
But do you know what ruined math for a lot of people? The invention of the calculator. As soon as the calculator.
I don't believe that's what ruined it. I think that was a result of the thing that ruined math, which is disconnecting the math from the physical application, because then it's harder for you to actively, you know, work on something that you care about. Now it's just an abstract construct.
But
it's a lot easier to work on something when you can tie it to something you actually care about. Like math for football players, if you explain it in a way where it's used to explain things in the physics of football, you can rope in a lot of people who are losing it and not able to actually focus and absorb the information. Now are suddenly absorbing that information and learning at an incredibly high rate.
Yeah, I get
because
that.
Because you found what they care about.
There are solutions.
But right, and if you make I'm saying if you make it too abstract, then it's too hard for people to care about it. And then they want to try to find a shortcut. And thus is born the abacus, which was the beginning of the calculations with calculation machines.
Yeah.
Because that way they could get something to do the work for them, so they don't have to waste their time thinking about something they don't care about.
Well, I get all that, but
easy to pay attention and spend your time thinking about and working on things you care about. It's not easy to work on something you don't give a crap about.
Yeah, but
you gotta care, you know?
My thing is
don't remove the care. Don't remove the emotional factor or discount the emotional factor of human beings. play upon it and use it to the advantage for all the people involved.
Well, I get all that, but you get people accustomed to having things done easily for them, and nobody's studying computers. And so eventually a computer will fix itself, and we aren't worried about that. And so they go on about their own business. If one day anything goes awry and nobody knows how to fix it, that scene in the movie Idiocracy, that's what it'll look like.
Well, actually, there's an even more extreme version of that in the Foundation series by Isaac Asimov, which far predates Idiocracy. They had entire religions that rose up around the maintenance crews for nuclear facilities that were so no-break, so self-repairing, so long-lasting, that generations had gone by where no one had to do anything to check on it or maintain the equipment. So eventually, to justify having them there, they ended up creating their own religions, and then eventually they didn't even realize it was a religion that they had created. Meaning a rigorous doing that became it took on a spiritual meaning for them. You know what I mean? So they didn't even really understand how their equipment worked. So you have these people who have the knowledge that came in and just stomped all over them because they did not know what they were working with, and therefore they wouldn't know how to fix something if somebody broke it on purpose because it never broke down on its own.
Yep.
And no one had ever tried to break it down before.
Well, there you go. So we got to keep our eyes peeled on the way we move into the future. But anyway, folks, renewable energy, ? I put it out there. This is what I think about it. So if you like today's show, share the podcast with somebody. Thank you, Thomas, for being on here. And everybody out there, peace and love, and take care. And join us on the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow. Same time, same place. Stay tuned for the Music with Kara Hour. It will start right here shortly, so we'll see y'all. You've been listening to Mad Science. Take care.
It'll be the same science.
Can you hear me? Give my creation life!
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends. There it is.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.